It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Mike Elgin is here. Jason Calacanis. Lots of financial news. We'll talk about all the quarterly reports from Google, Facebook, Apple, Twitter. We'll also talk about virtual reality, Wither virtual reality. We'll talk about the Tesla, the new Gigafactory. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 573, recorded Sunday, July 31st, 2016. A very vindictive bulldog. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/twit. And by Braintree. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one easy integration. Learn more at braintreepayments.com/twit. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now. Enter the promo code TWIT for 30% off your entire order. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news in front of a live studio audience. Mm-hmm. You're here, Jason Calacanis.
Thanks for having me.
In person. So thrilled to have you.
Good to be here.
He is at calacanis.com, and of course you can find a bunch of great newsletters now.
Inside.com, yeah.
At Inside.com. On every subject, including electric cars and everything.
I've done six newsletters so far. It's my theory is, and thanks for the plug, that journalism is really having a challenging time because everybody's link baiting. And if you email people, it's kind of the purest form of communication. So I'm trying to hire the best journalists, start an email relationship with a small cohort of people, 10, 20,000 people per email newsletter. Put a little bit of advertising in it.
Is that the break-even number, 10 or 20,000?
I think, yeah, something like 10 or 20,000. It takes 10 hours to 20 hours to do a really good newsletter, I think. So for a good writer, it takes a full day to write a quality
newsletter. So originally Inside.com was going to be kind of targeted
news app.
Web page.
Well, it was going to be news apps, yeah. Right? And then it turned out 250,000 people download the app and 500 people use it a day. 2,000 people use it a day.
Yeah.
Then we took the top 10% of the people who had installed the app. We sent them the newsletter with just the same exact content as the app, and 40, 50, 60% of people
Isn't
open
that
it.
Interesting.
So it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why are we doing about app? Apps, right? Yeah. And so the idea of a news app is kind of hard because the social networks have kind of run the table on news.
Jason's just back from the Gigafactory grand opening. We'll talk about that. But I want to introduce our other panelist, Mike Elgin, who's visiting us from Aix-en-Provence in France, where it's after midnight.
Right.
Bonsoir, or I guess it's bonjour now.
Yes, it is. from here on out, it's bonjour.
Always great to see you. And I just love you got the window open. And I imagine outside is kind of a French street, cobblestone.
Yes. Young lovers stumbling down the cobblestone. It's France. It's all night, believe me.
France all night. I like that. I don't even know where to start. We have a lot of financial reports, although I'm not that interested in how the stock market reacts to a quarterly report. That what we talk about is really more how technology is changing our lives and what it means and things like that. But as I've pointed out before, the stock price does make a difference in who a company can hire, right?
Yeah, of course. And it's a pretty good bellwether as to how the company's doing because...
Is it?
I think so. I mean, there can be all kinds of shenanigans with stocks and people shorting them. But generally speaking, the markets get it right.
Really?
Eventually.
Because it seems like the market always... Well, what is the slogan? You buy on the rumor and you sell on the news.
Yeah, and sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
Actually, it was reversed for Apple, wasn't it? The price was depressed until the news came out.
Correct.
And then it came back up.
Yeah, and Apple's like a really interesting case because... you know, they've been going through this money printing machine with the iPhone. It's just unbelievable how much money that device makes and how they've maintained a pretty good margin on it. They make a huge profit compared to Android phones, which make no profit. But people are starting to think.
I want to show you this. This is a Chinese-made phone, the Axon.
Yeah.
It is from ZTE, $400. And in every respect, I would say it is the equal of the iPhone. Camera, yep. Screen might even be better. It's certainly higher res. It's fast. It's Android. It's the only negative. So Apple's only lock-in is iOS.
Yeah, the whole experience.
But they're paying twice as much for iOS. Is it worth it?
Well, first of all, they're not going to sell a billion. Another thing that Apple has a great advantage on is accessories, cases, and all that. It's so well supported by software, by add-ons and stuff like that. But
and Apple's going to double down on accessories because if they are true to the rumors, they're going to remove the headphone port, and you'll have to buy special headphones.
Yeah, this is just like the original iPhone when they came out with a phone that had no keyboard, and everybody said that's impossible. Nobody's going to use a phone with no keyboard, and now you can't have a keyboard, and even BlackBerry isn't going to make phones with keyboards. And so I think this will be a non-issue in a few years once we get over the pain and suffering of not being able to use our devices without a stupid dongle.
A dongle but Apple makes a lot of money licensing, I might point out. You know, there's no money in licensing a mini jack, but there's a lot of money in licensing a lightning jack.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the report was they actually sold a lot of phones that people bought.
Not the fancy ones.
Not the fancy ones. This iPhone...
iPhone's unit sales for the quarter fell 15% year to year. Oh, only 40 million. I mean, it's still a good number.
Yeah. But they beat the expectation.
Everybody thought Apple it would drop.
Go ahead, Leo.
Go ahead. No, it's your turn.
Apple, what has to be, you have to think about Apple in terms of everybody wants to see that curve going up. But in the past year or so, everything about Apple's success has been related to China. There was an artificial series of events in China, growing out Apple stores, getting on China Mobile, and busting in with a large device with this Chinese market.
See,
really
Apple's
wanted.
Just like Yahoo. Yep. It's all about China, right?
not exactly. But now
in a different way.
Rocky in China, right? So that sort of you can't come barging into a new China every year. So we're comparing the sort of post-China entrance.
Right.
To the China entrance.
Actually, if India weren't so recalcitrant, because India is another very big market, but Apple's having a hard time penetrating it because they're a U.S. company.
They keep trying to get this lower-end phone working, and it seems like people are buying up that...
Well, that was the story of of their quarterly results this week, was that the SE sold very well, right?
Let's call it the 5. It's basically like the iPhone 5. They just sort of re-put it out.
It's only $100 cheaper, though, right?
But I think for some people who are on the top end of the Android, they might pull the trigger based on that.
It's close enough.
Also, the cycles. I mean, that's the big question that nobody can really answer is, are people going to keep their phones longer now that, you know, the upgrade cycle doesn't feel as necessary, right? So the difference between the iPhone 5 and 6, the difference between the 6 and the 7, are they going to be really, you know, step functions, or are they going to be just incremental? And it feels like incrementalism right now. We'll see. You know, Apple could have surprises. They might do something really interesting with VR with the new iPhone 7. The headset is not a reason to upgrade. The cameras, you know, have been a reason to upgrade in the past, but, you know, the camera at 4K, how much better could
everybody's got decent cameras. Maybe they're not quite as good, but even this Axon at half the price has a decent camera.
Yeah, HD is HD.
It's interesting because Apple's
VR
iPhone
or augmented reality can have an impact on the mass market. I think
I don't think it has any impact. I think it's a gimmick at this point.
Yeah.
And Apple's phones are not high res enough to do VR well, so they're going to have to upgrade their screens to 4K. Right now they're, you know, the 5S Plus or 6S Plus is only 1080p.
Yeah, they're just extracting as much value as they can out of this iPhone franchise.
Two-thirds of their sales.
Yeah. And
of their revenue.
If you took it out, the company would be in really rough shape. So the question is, what becomes their next big thing? And services is one piece, right? So the iTunes store, selling movies, and then there's other hardware and obviously cloud storage. But these things are not, you know, huge compared to the massive money printing machine that the iPhone has been. The good news is they've saved up over $200 billion, which makes them the largest hedge fund in the world. They've just got this mountain of cash, which to me means if they don't get a new product out there, and it looks like the Project Titan, their car, they're backed off making their own car.
Isn't that interesting? That's the latest rumor is that they're going to sell software, not hardware.
Good luck with that. And so I think that's...
Well, even, you know, I'm thinking about Tesla. Of course, you know a lot about Tesla, friend of Elon's. But Elon's been very clear, and so have people like George Hotz, you interviewed on This Week in Startups, that you can't do the software and hardware separately.
No.
They're very tightly integrated. You need the data you get from the car to improve the software.
Which is what Apple's done typically, right? Their whole ecosystem. So this is a very weird. It could be maybe it's misinformation or who knows what it is. They have 1,000 engineers working on the car. But I think
by the way, as somebody's pointing out in the chat room, Apple's services suck.
Yeah, I mean,
strong suit.
No. And hardware is. So to take the hardware out is like, okay, what's the point of that? Like, that's what you're good at.
Do you want Apple Maps to drive your car?
Not exactly. So I think there's a high chance that Apple could go on tilt in the poker sense and start buying stuff up. They have all that cash. If the revenue picture doesn't get great and they can't release a new groundbreaking product, which obviously the watch has been a sideways product, that's not groundbreaking. We thought it would be. It's not a must-have. I mean, how many people in the audience here bought the watch? How many people are wearing it? Okay, like two.
Two. We got two.
There's three people who bought it. Two out of three.
The people who come to Twitter are definitely a
bellwether.
Outliers was the word I was going to use.
Well,
I see more Apple Watches than I have in the past.
But there's 10
on
people
the
here. Only three have bought it, which tells you something. Yeah. Only 30% from the Twitter audience. Yeah. And I bought one. I don't wear it.
You bought one. I don't wear it.
So they have to come up with something.
Mr. Elgin's wearing his.
Yeah.
Why do you wear it, Mike? Mine. Why?
I wear it primarily to take remote control pictures easily.
There's a use case.
I sit the phone over there and I just hit the button and takes a picture.
I don't want to know.
It's big in the selfie game. It's big in the selfie game. Mike's big in the selfie. You know, it's Mike's like all those millennials. They're just big on selfies.
I mean, one of my favorite things to do is to do GIFs just instead of pictures. And I do a lot of GIFs, like probably half the things I post are GIFs. And on the automatic setting with the watch, it'll take 10 in a row, which makes a perfect GIF of the kind that I do. So I use it for that reason. And it takes an even more perfect GIF because you're not moving the phone. You're not holding the phone. You're not touching the phone. Mm. The phone is propped up elsewhere. And then you're touching the watch. And so it's a really expensive gift machine, basically.
And wasn't that the preamble of the Constitution in order to make a more perfect GIF?
I think that's right.
Maybe I haven't read that Constitution lately.
They're going to buy stuff. I mean, that $200 billion.
But wait a minute. Most of that $200 billion is held offshore, so they can't buy U.S. companies.
Correct.
Is that a disadvantage?
They could always bring the money home. There's very few.
At a high tax premium.
Yeah, they're going to have to pay a third of it back to taxes or something in that regard, in that range.
Is the amnesty, Obama talked about an amnesty. Is that still?
Yeah, I think if Trump wins, there'll be a huge, huge amnesty program.
Huge amnesty.
We're going to get that money back.
Well, Trump says we want Apple to bring all its manufacturing back to the U.S. The only way you do that is by saying, here's some huge tax incentives.
Yeah, we're going to have to make some incentives. And this idea that manufacturing can't be done here is a little crazy. I mean, I just went to the Gigafactory opening, and Elon is going to be making more batteries here.
Right.
That the current factory, which is only 17%, this huge building, is only 17% of what the factory will be. That one building, or the first piece of the building, can make more batteries than were made in all of 2014.
Is he doing that because it's so expensive to ship lithium-ion batteries? Yeah, they're heavy, right?
Yeah. His big idea is like first principles. And, you know, he wants materials to come in one side of the factory and a great product.
You know
who
else wanted to do that? Henry Ford, the Rouge plant that he built in Dearborn.
Yeah.
Railroad cars of iron, coke, lumber, trees, not even cut up, trees would come in one end, Model T would come out the other end.
And then his
basic... So it's not new.
What Elon told me was he's just laser focused on the factory. Forget about the cars. He's got teams. The cars are great. They're awesome. They're award winning. What he's trying to do is make a factory that's so efficient that it can make cars and make batteries 5 or 10 times cheaper. He thinks he can make his plant 10 times more efficient.
And the car price falls.
Right. Because if you look at the cars that we bought, whether it's the X or the Model S, you know, you're talking about the original battery pack in the Roadster, I believe, was about $40,000. I don't have inside information, so I'm just going off of what I've read. To be clear, but the original one was 40.
You can't make a $30,000 car with a $40,000
battery. Exactly. And then if you think about the Model S, my understanding from what I've read in the press, again, not from Elon, is $20,000 or something like that. So who knows how cheap the Model 3 battery can get, but if it's a $35,000 car, I'm going to guess a third of it will be the battery pack. And if he makes batteries 5 or 10 times more efficiently, maybe he gets the battery packs down to $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, then everybody can drive these cars.
Tesla really feels, now that I have one, I feel like it really is like an electric go-kart that put some nice stuff on top of it.
Safe
you know,
car.
You really feel like you're on a sled with a giant battery, and then they put a shell around it.
Yeah.
And they put some software in there to make you feel better.
But doing it end-to-end is going to be the big thing. Yeah. And I just think Apple has no way of catching Elon at this point.
Wait. So I think the problem with all of this, and one of the reasons why I kind of buy the rumors that it makes sense for Apple to focus on software, is that in the self-driving universe of the future, there will be Teslas. There will be guys like you who have a Tesla. But I think it'll be like sailboats. Like right now, like
we have sailing, yachts,
you know, ships. But exactly. So most waterborne transportation isn't with sails or sailboats.
Right.
But people who are enthusiastic about it and have the means to have one can own a sailboat. And I think in the future, a nice car is something that only a tiny minority of people have.
Personal car ownership is going to disappear, I think.
Right? I think
that's the goal.
It's Mike's right.
They'll
on
become
that.
A commodity. They have these little cars here in Aix-en-Provence and probably all over Europe, for all I know. You know, they have these little tiny narrow streets. And so they have these special purpose cars that are for those little streets. And the way they're built, they have like a swiper in the back, a credit card swiper. So you hop in, you swipe the credit card, you punch the thing. There's a driver.
It's like City Bike? There is a driver.
Yes. Well, there's a driver, but of course in the future they won't. But it's very utilitarian. There's very spacious. The back of it isn't like sitting in the back of a car. It's like sitting in a kind of this open sort of little living room thing. And that's exactly, I think, how self-driving cars will be. Now, what Apple wants is the content consumption experience. When you drive in a car, you're going to pay a lot less attention to driving the roads and all that stuff. You're going to be focused on consuming content, watching movies, doing VR, listening to music, communicating with people on video calls and stuff like that. And that's the experience that Apple doesn't want to miss out on. So if they can come out with the ultimate experience for the content consumption experience within a self-driving car that is, of course, a big commodity and that you don't even have to own, then I think they'll win the future. And if they get locked out of that market, there's a big two-digit chunk of the content consumption world that they will have nothing to do with.
It's a... The one person's margin is another person's like business opportunity. And so the margin on cars, whatever people make, that can be just evaporated and people can rent these things. And so Elon in his master plan part two.
Is he a fan of Hot Shots, the movie? Is that where that came from?
I actually could tell you where it came from. I was talking to him.
It's a little weird.
I swear to God, I was talking to him about the master plan and I said to him, should call it Part Deux.
You thought of it?
And he goes, that's hysterical, thanks. And he used it. It was pretty funny.
Just throw a French word in.
No,
why
I was
not?
Like, because we were laughing about that film,
Hot Shots Part Deux. It is Hot
and
Shots.
And he said, I'm writing this thing. And I said, call it Part Deux. And he wrote back, I'm going to use that.
Oh, my God.
It was
God.
Pretty funny.
Next one will be Master Plan the Quickening.
So in the Master Plan, he talks about renting your car. And now that you have your Tesla, the Tesla has a really great app that lets you unlock it, locate it, set the temperature of the air, and you can watch it in real time. All these things that are kind of obvious, like, you know, kind of like Uber's app. And so I think what he put in the master plan is you're going to be able to take your car and put it into the pool of cars that are available. So in the next 2 or 3 years,
I think... So there'll be a switch on the app that says if somebody wants to take it.
Take it, right. And so you might not do that for your X, but if you had the Model 3 and you think about Zipcar, I had somebody working for me, one of my techs, who would put his car on, because he didn't use it except for the weekends, and he put it on Zipcar. He told me that he was making more than his car payment.
Wow.
In other words, his car went from being a cost center to a profit center for him.
That's part of the master plan.
And that's part of the master plan, is you can take your Model 3, put it in the pool, and if anybody's used Getaround or Zipcar or any of these kind of services, they're perfect for cities, and they're perfect for, you know, probably half the audience, which only uses a car a small amount of time.
Most cars do it for $100 an hour for my X.
The X is not exactly the one you would let out there. So then he'll probably do the Zipcar thing in the coming years. Now, full autonomy in the car coming to you, dropping you off, that's at least 10 years out in my mind.
Yep.
Level 4, level 5 is 10 years out. Everybody's very excited about it.
And so is whatever Apple's working on in the car space.
Well, exactly.
We're not going to see that anytime soon. That's
people
also
are a little drunk on this self-driving thing, like how quickly it's going to be here.
Yes. Elon's a little at fault for that. I think calling it, now that I've used it, it's cool, But calling it autopilot implies more than it's really just very fancy cruise control and lane.
Level two.
Yeah.
Two things and are being so, taken care of.
Maybe, you know, my sense of this is, and look, I'm a huge admirer. I think Elon Musk is making a big difference in the world. And one of the smart things he's doing is with things like bioweapon defense mode and ludicrous mode, he's, and the word autopilot is marketing. He's really selling a dream. I don't anticipate encountering any bioweapons in the near future.
I talked to him about the autopilot naming actually back in the day when he said he thought that the bridge step would be, this is 5 years ago, would be before full autonomy, there'll be like an autopilot mode where you'll have to pay attention like a pilot in a plane, but the plane will take care of some of the functions, right? Just like it's very similar to going from a stick ship to
but doesn't automatic pilot and kind of imply autonomy? Isn't that kind
of partial autonomy?
Yeah,
it's partial autonomy. Now, what
you really wouldn't want to do that.
Here's the thing. No. If you just think about how educated you're getting about how computers work, you were describing, I think, on a previous podcast, that you see the cars, you see the motorcycle, you can see the truck.
It's amazing.
What he's done that's, I think, particularly brilliant is he's explaining to the audience on an educational basis in the dashboard what the computer is seeing.
Right.
So you're actually learning what the computer is capable
of. What it knows
of,
and what it doesn't
and
know.
And what it doesn't know.
It didn't see the bag of cement that I was coming up on.
Absolutely
so
not.
So I took the wheel and steered around it because it couldn't see it.
And I think one of the things that's happened is you just have a bunch of people who are jumping the fence with this technology where they're just like, oh, well, this it's working on a you know, on the 101 perfectly. Like I drove up here from the peninsula. It was perfect the entire way.
I've driven now in my over a week, almost 200 miles. More than half of that is autopilot.
Right.
Full autopilot.
And
lane
so
change, lane, you know,
here's
steering.
The question. If you were on a highway.
But I kept my hand on the wheel and I'm paying attention.
This is all you need to know. This is the first generation of the product. If I told you your family and you could be on a road where 100% of the cars had autopilot.
Then I'd feel safe.
Or none of them had it. Which would you pick?
Yeah. So but that's the problem. It's not 100%.
But here's the thing, though, Jason. I don't think people are ever going to want to really fully disengage with what's happening with their fully self-driving cars. Statistically, self-driving cars are going to be massively safer than human drivers. But
10X,
individually, you don't make that choices like that based on statistics.
No, you think you're an excellent driver. Everybody thinks they're a great driver.
Let me give you an example. If you were to take a baby and roll the baby in a baby carriage down to one of the public parks in Petaluma and leave it there and go shopping in downtown Petaluma, overwhelming likelihood is that nobody would harm the baby. Nothing would happen to the baby. But nobody would ever do that.
Right.
Based on the infinitesimally small chance that something could happen.
Yeah.
And likewise, people are not with their kids in the car going to go down the highway and take a nap while...
Unfortunately, there are some doofuses who do.
The videos on YouTube are unbelievable.
They get the attention. But I have to tell you, we called my insurance agent. And as soon as we said it was a Model X, they said, okay, well, your deductible is now $6,000. And then she said, are you using autopilot? We said, yes. She said, That did not reassure her, did not make it feel like it was safer, although I believe I am safer.
It is safer, for sure.
It scared her, and I'm wondering how insurance companies, given the latest, you know, most recent news, are going
to happen is change like, people may have to, like, explicitly sign on to this and sign a waiver or something. Yeah. I'm just thinking because some group of people are using this technology incorrectly, and it gives you ample warning that you
It says put your hand on the wheel.
I think with the latest update, I may be wrong, but I'm anecdotally feeling like it's telling you more often to put your hand on the wheel than the last update. But it's going to save so many lives, and it's worth pursuing.
Yep. It reminds me of Pokemon Go.
What? Oh, did you see the guy playing Pokemon Go while he was driving it?
Yes. There is a confluence.
Why are we not arresting these people?
Yeah, just arrest that guy.
Just arrest the
dude. By the way,
he
realized that was what he did was highly illegal and pulled the video down, but... no, because Pokemon Go had some features that encouraged people to trespass, to wander off cliffs, to not pay attention. In the latest update, which came out yesterday, first of all, many more warnings when you launch it. One of them says don't trespass. And they took out the radar feature, which people were using to try to track down rare Pokemon. This is clearly an issue. If you're selling 100 million copies of Pokemon Go, you have to be aware that some percentage of people are going to do stupid things.
Yeah, we should absolutely build all products in the world based on how the stupidest people.
Well, that's why it says don't eat the silica gel in the.
Right. So it's like, don't use the toaster.
Gee, the vitamins are this size, and then there's a white bag that says don't eat.
Not for internal consumption.
Yeah.
But it'll dry me out. I'm feeling moist.
We're just, the world is trending towards the least common denominator.
Well, idiocracy, you know.
It feels like we're trending towards idiocracy. Like, it's very sad, the person who died in the car, but. You know, all indications are that he was, like, literally watching a movie. And then this other guy playing Pokemon Go. There's a group of people who do stupid things. And, you know, we can't give up the mission of making this technology for them.
Mike, you wrote an article in Computer World. Is it dumb to trust smart technology? Tell us.
And that's what I was going to bring up is one of the mistakes we're going to make is as soon as we have anything that's automatable, we're going to be all, okay, done with that. Hand it over to the machines, and that's going to be fine for trivial things that don't matter, but not so much for things that do matter. And the most recent scandal was that there's a pet feeder that uses a cloud service called PetNet, and PetNet went down.
So all these
dogs went hungry for about 10 hours, and it was, you know, it was a relatively minor problem. But what happened, what people were complaining, because they said, oh, I can't feed my dog manually. We're on vacation. We got in the station wagon. We drove to, you know, Jellystone. and so this is the problem. You can't leave a pet in the care of a cloud service.
Well, you shouldn't. You really shouldn't.
Yeah.
You should. And people are doing it.
And even, I mean, part of the problem is the statistics lie a little bit, because you can say, well, autopilot's driven, 130 million miles.
Yeah.
The average fatality as people drive in the United States is every 80 million miles. So we're doing better. Doesn't really tell the whole story, because even if only 0.1% of people die due to autopilot, that's going to be perceived as a massive failure.
I call this the Craigslist killer phenomenon.
Same thing.
Anytime a new technology comes out, people blame the technology for something that already exists in the world. So when Craigslist came out, you probably remember like these big headlines, Craigslist killer, as if Craigslist manufactured a serial killer, sent them out into the world, and then murdered people. It was like, no, a murderer put, you know, a honeypot on Craigslist and then murdered some people. You know, if the person killed them with, you know, a certain brand of Acme knife, it wouldn't be the Acme knife murders, you know,
right.
Or if they ran people over with a Volvo, we're not calling it the Volvo murders.
If you're the one person whose spouse or father was killed in an autopilot wreck, that's not going to reassure you that, well, this is 99% safer than driving. He might have been killed anyway. It's not going to make you feel any better.
These are emotional situations, clearly, and people will project into them. You know,
but we're human. That's how humans. We aren't statistical beings.
Yeah. We will make decisions based on emotion, and we will blame things emotionally that should not be blamed.
I understand.
Especially
public
new things,
health.
We blame new things.
Right.
You know, there's an inherent tech bias in the public in general, and the media in particular, where that says, you know, I wrote a series of articles about people texting in cars, and how I believe that, yes, people are causing accidents because they're paying attention to their phones in cars. But those are the same people who would be eating or reading the newspaper or doing something else if they didn't have the phones. They're distracted, dangerous people.
Yeah.
And one of the best statistics for this is that we went from a world over the last 20 years, from a world in which nobody had a phone to a world in which pretty much everybody has a phone. And you would think that if texting and driving was causing all these accidents, that the accident rate would have risen. But in fact, it's declined due to safety features in cars and things like that. Where are all those extra car accidents that are being caused by this brand new behavior that didn't exist before? Well, it's the same idiots causing distracted drivers. I've seen people putting on makeup in their cars, reading the newspaper.
Yeah, I have
eating,
a new program.
Making
for
sandwich,
but you can blame them for that.
Yeah.
If
yes.
autopilot kills them, it's a different matter. Then the machine killed them. And you understand psychologically, that's significantly different.
Yeah. When I run for mayor, I have a very simple program that I'm going to deploy, which is if you're caught in your car on your phone, we are going to take your phone from you, not the car.
The phone.
I'm literally going to send the cops out there, and they're going to specifically look for people on their phones, pull them over. They're not going to give them a ticket. They're going to take their phone from them.
Do like your sixth grade teacher did.
Literally, you are in timeout. I'm taking your phone from you right now. We're putting it we're going to give it, we're going to put it at the police station, and you can pick it up in 72 hours. Your phone is going in the tank. Can you imagine? People would stop immediately. The audience is laughing, but it would stop the behavior immediately.
It's much worse than a $125 ticket.
It's worse than any fine. I don't have my phone. People go into a full-scale panic. And literally, you do that, and you put the film on the internet of the cops taking the phones, and the cop with a stack of... Can you imagine the cop with a car full of iPhones in little bags?
It'd be like the new red asphalt.
A guy in the chat room named Mashed Potato says he'll vote for you.
Oh, I am going to win. MayorJason.com. Trump has inspired me. MayorJason.com.
You know, it starts with mayor. It goes on from there. I think 2024, 2028.
We're in the burn it down.
We'll be looking for a savior.
It's the burn it down party.
We will be looking for a savior. We'll absolutely say, hallelujah, Jason, save us.
Triple the number of cops. That's what I'm doing in San Francisco.
Your conclusion, and I think it's an apt conclusion, Mike, in your article, is we need a set of cultural norms that makes it clear to people automating important things does not and cannot replace a human paying attention. That's always been the case. I remember when our kids were little and we were raising them, our mantra was there is no substitute for parental supervision. Period.
Yeah.
Period. This was in the era when people were wanting to put internet filters on the router. And you got to be involved. You can't replace your parental responsibilities with a filter or with this auto-driving car.
People are dumb. People are dumb. And one of the things that has happened with additional safety features, better seat belts, airbags, and all that stuff, is people now drive more recklessly. So people kind of push the envelope on recklessness. And I think we're going to see the same.
Autopilot's going to do it. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And we already see it. YouTube is the evidence. Yep. I, on the other hand, was so terrified. I had my foot hovered over the brake pedal, my hands on the wheel, and I was scanning the traffic more than I would have normally.
I think it should make you more alert. Yeah.
It should make you more alert.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
But at the same time, as I'm driving home and I'm getting a little drowsy, I'm thinking, well, at least I don't have to worry about plowing into the car ahead of me or just going off the road.
Fender benders are going to end. I mean, the idea that you're going to be in a shopping mall and you're going to back into somebody, it tells you how many inches you are from the other car now, down to the inch in the Tesla. Yeah. And it's like 6 inches, 5 inches. I mean, if you hit the other car.
It says stop.
Yeah, it's like stop,
and
dummy.
Even if you're not using autopilot, correct me if I'm wrong, if it thinks you're going to run into something, it will jam on the brakes.
It's a separate feature. It's called auto braking, and it's one of the most fantastic technologies ever invented in terms of saving
Volvo's
lives.
Had
and
it's really,
and so it failed because of the reflective nature of the truck and so on, and that's separate from autopilot. But you know what? That's a feature that is extra in addition to what the driver is doing. When you're driving a car and there's a truck in front of you, it's your job as the driver to apply the brakes.
That's why I think that the semiotics are important. You shouldn't call it autopilot. Call it driver assist. Call it something that communicates the idea. It's not going to drive itself.
Right. Keep your hand on the wheel. I mean, it tells you a hundred times.
But I think Elon knows that autopilot's sexier than driver assist. And
honestly, I don't even think it was a sexy thing. I think it literally was, in his mind.
That's what it is.
Accurate.
Like an airplane.
Just like an airplane. Yeah. And nobody who's piloting a plane puts it on autopilot and then goes to the back and takes a nap.
But that's pilots. They know better.
That's actually not true. Some pilots do take naps. There's it's an entirely different situation. I mean, when you're flying,
there's not a lot of traffic
in air traffic. Right, exactly. And you can feel it. You can feel everything that's happening.
Yeah.
Even as you're taking a nap.
Nevertheless,
they shouldn't do that. But
humans who aren't pilots think autopilot means it flies itself. And,
correct.
And that's the problem. A pilot's well trained. One hopes.
One hopes.
And understands the limitations of autopilot. We're going to take a break, come back with more. I want to hear about the Gigafactory. And we have still Google and Facebook. We got a lot of quarterly results. We barely got through Apple. We haven't even finished Apple. I want to bring up, actually, the Nobel Prize laureate economist who said Apple is engaged in fraud with its tax strategy.
Oof.
And we got to fix it.
Brutal.
Our show today brought to you by Texture. I know you love magazines. I love magazines. I think if anybody watches this show, listens to this show, it means you probably have a good brain, a good head on your shoulders, and you like information, you like to absorb stuff. And as tough as it's become for newspapers in this country, there's still great stuff being written in magazines. The New Yorker, National Geographic. Every month there's something in Rolling Stone. There's an article I want to read. And then there's magazines you probably don't subscribe to, but it'd be kind of fun if you had the Billboard charts and you could see them whenever you felt like it, or maybe look at Ad Age and see what the going price for a Super Bowl. Wouldn't it be great if you could read magazines like you watch movies on Netflix? Now you can. Texture.com. We're all binge watching these days thanks to Netflix. Now you can start binge reading. When it comes to magazines, they're all there. You don't want to subscribe. You don't want to buy because it costs a lot of money, not to mention the burden on your coffee table. Wouldn't it be great to have, like, National Geographic? Great images in there. And now they're on your iPad. They look gorgeous. You're getting every page that's in the newsstand edition, plus stuff that they can't put in the magazine, like video. You also get back issues. So you're reclaiming the magazine reading experience in a way that really works for you. The next time you get on a plane, you'll have all those magazines. You can read them offline. Just favorite the magazines you like. They'll download automatically. You'll also get insider access to content from the world's most in-demand publications. And I love this. They encourage us. You can share your subscription with your family. So once you sign up for Texture, you're going to have 5 devices. So Lisa has our family account, but I still get the magazines. We have it on my iPad, her iPad, and my Android phone and her Android phone. She has an iPhone. It's awesome. You're going to get it free if you want to try it, see what it's like. You'll get all the top magazines, back issues, bonus video content free at texture.com/twit. texture.com/twit. Try the free trial.
I actually wasn't aware of it, but I love the fact that you can share it across 5 people.
That's nice that they do that. Yeah. I think that's really nice. They say it in the ad, so it must be true.
Mm. I'm in.
I mean, in other words, they're not prohibiting you from doing that.
Yeah. No, it was like the early days of Netflix where, like, people were sharing accounts and they were like, oh, we kind of like turning a blind eye to it. Then it was like, oh, this is a feature. Let's charge $12 and or $11 or whatever it is and give people actually the ability to stream to 5 devices.
Actually, according to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, that might be technically a felony. This was an interesting judgment. Actually, the update is they've maybe taken a step back for that. They made a decision in a business case, the U.S. versus Nassau, that it was a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act when somebody logged, I'm trying to remember the facts of the case. Well, here it is.
Somebody sharing a password was illegal and they were going to go to jail and federal prison for 20 years.
Well, there's
years.
A couple of things. There was the Second Circuit and there was the Ninth Circuit. And I think in the Ninth Circuit, the issue was somebody had shared the password to a corporate internet, and that was considered a violation, a felony, a serious felony, because the CFAA is a very serious law. And so many people reviewed it, said that the court's decision was so broad that it seemed to make it a federal crime to use somebody else's password, even with their knowledge and permission.
Well, this is what Matthew Keyes is going to jail for, the journalist.
Right.
And he allegedly, or now I guess he's been convicted of doing this. So I don't know if it's alleged anymore. I don't know the technical term for if you're going to jail for it. It's not alleged anymore. He gave, allegedly or confirmed now, the passwords to the Tribune sites to an anonymous chat room, and then they defaced the sites, and then he's going to jail for like 2 years or something. It's pretty – they're really punitive about
this. It's a serious law. It's intended to fight hacking, right?
We're pretty hardcore about this hacking in this country with these computer regulations. I mean, if you literally broke into the L.A. Times and, you know – deface the lobby and stole a bunch of stuff, I think you go to jail for less time than if you deface the website. So it might be a little bit over punitive to put some of these hackers away, but it's the world we live in.
Then there's Facebook versus Power Ventures. Power Ventures was offering, I think, some sort of contact list management thing, and they asked Facebook users to allow them access to their account so they could get their contacts. Facebook sent them a cease and desist.
Yeah, against the terms of service, yeah.
And Power Ventures continued, saying, well, no, we have the permission of your customer, the user, to access their contacts. What's wrong with that? The Ninth Circuit found that Power Ventures violated the CFAA by doing that. And the court acknowledged Facebook users could give Power Ventures valid authorization to access their accounts. They've changed it. They backed off a little bit, So I'm a little confused. This has recently happened. The EFF has a very long article that I'm not going to try to parse right now. But Ninth Circuit has now backed away from its dangerous password sharing decision, they say, but creates even more confusion about the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. So,
Brave New World.
Yeah. Well, the problem is it's hard to know.
Yeah.
It's hard to know. And the problem is also it's hard for the perpetrator to know, am I committing a federal crime here or just logging in to my friend's Netflix account? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're okay with the Netflix account. I think sharing your work password if you work at Goldman Sachs, you may not want to give your the Tribune or the New York Times. Don't give your password to anybody else.
Yeah. So this was on a Bloomberg interview. Nobel Prize winning economist Joseph Stiglitz, let me go to the Bloomberg page so we can see it directly, calls Apple's profit reporting in Ireland a fraud. Now, he doesn't say it's illegal. He says our current tax system encourages companies to keep their money abroad, opens up a vast loophole through what is called the transfer pricing system that allows them not only to keep their money abroad but effectively escape taxation. He, by the way, advises the Clinton campaign.
It sounds like from the headline that he's accusing Apple of fraud, but
they're not, because it's
accusing
legal
lawmakers
of
perpetuating this fraud, and that's exactly what it is. They need to pass laws and treaties. The European Union needs to do faster than they're now doing it, figure out what's really going on in Ireland. But Apple is not doing anything wrong. They're finding the most advantageous tax situation, and they're taking advantage of it. It's all legal.
He says, here we have the largest corporation in capitalization, not only in America, but in the world, bigger than GM was at its peak, claiming that most of its profits originate from a few hundred people working in Ireland. Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Yeah,
the reason this is an issue. Yeah. The reason this is an issue is right now we have this great wealth disparity. This is why Bernie Sanders was such a popular candidate. And this is why Trump is also a popular candidate.
Same thing. I agree.
It all comes back to the disparity in wealth.
Inequality.
Income inequality, wealth inequality. And when people feel no hope and they don't have the ability to advance, whether it's the poor to the middle class or the middle class to the upper middle class, and that's how the large part of the country and the world feels right now, they're going to start looking at things like conspicuous consumption on individuals' part or tax loopholes and saying, hey, if I'm getting screwed in my life and I have no hope, these other things become highlighted. So if the world felt more fair, which it should, then Apple's tax,
wouldn't be
as upset. But you just have this really horrible situation in the world where people are not advancing and don't have hope, and you have a whole generation of people who are moving back in with their parents. And it just feels hopeless to them. And that's why these things are being highlighted. If you think about it on a realistic basis, if the corporate tax rate in the United States is 35% and it's 12.5%
in Ireland. Yeah.
You know, what we have to do is just have some common sense here and leadership say, you know what, we're going to allow American companies to repatriate their cash at 22%.
That was the proposal.
18%.
Was a tax amnesty.
Just split the
Apple
difference.
Apple has, of its $232 billion in cash, $215 billion is held outside the U.S.
Right.
And the way they do it is they transfer intellectual property rights to this small Irish holding company and then say all the profit that we make worldwide is from this small company in Ireland.
Yeah.
It's not illegal. Probably, it feels a little unethical, but it's not illegal. In fact, Tim Cook even testified in front of Senate a few years ago saying that they should change the corporate tax code. He said he recommended eliminating all corporate tax expenditures, lower corporate income tax rates, and implement a reasonable tax on foreign earnings that allows a free flow of capital back.
And the easy way to sort of balance this out is to just say, you know what, we're going to raise the minimum wage in the country. And we're going to expand the K-12 system to pre-K to, maybe 2 years of vocational school after graduation. And we'll lower the tax rate, bring the cash back. And so there's a little give and take in the world. But it doesn't feel like with the polarization of the sides in this country that we have that.
Well, one of the things that people need to know, and this is not being discussed enough, is that there's actually a version of this for very, very small businesses.
Oh, really? Tell me about that, because I might take advantage of that loophole.
You should do. The nation of Estonia, which has a population approximately
the size of... I'm going to be there in 6 weeks. What can I do while I'm there?
They're offering something called e-residency. So if you want to
I want to get my card. I want to get that card. I'm going to get that card while I'm in Tallinn,
Yeah. So basically, if you do want to start a small business and headquarter it in Estonia instead of Delaware, their taxes are incredibly low. And you know, they don't give you a passport or anything.
Notice, by
stuff,
the way, my indignation about Apple's fraud has suddenly changed to interest.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a second.
If
I can get
can
in on
do
this?
That. They also have a digital card that has a public key on it that you can use. I mean, there's some really interesting. What is their corporate tax rate? Do you happen to know that?
I don't offhand, but it's very low, especially for Europe.
By the way, when Putin marches in and takes it over and NATO says, yeah, it's yours, we don't really want it, that's going to all change.
Yeah, hopefully your business is selling vodka.
Jeez.
Well, I mean, this is Gawker.
Still around?
Well, they're in the process of imploding.
Right?
They're being sold because on Friday or Saturday, or maybe on Friday, the judge said that Denton lied about the value of his shares, hard to believe, and that he Hogan could actually start collecting assets. So now he's got to actually go into bankruptcy because he said his shares were worth $100 million or something. They're actually worth $30 million. The judge seemed to have had enough of the shenanigans and basically said he lied, which may or may not be the case. The value of these companies can vary based on the buyer and the time very quickly. But the point is he had taken all of their trademarks and put them in Estonia, I believe, or no, Budapest. And he was trying to do this whole offshore thing and sort of protect himself. So there's a lot of that going on. And it just feels unfair to people when people do these kind of
I understand.
Things.
I
mean, people move out of California to try to avoid taxes. Like they're going to have a sale of something.
Right.
They move to
Nevada,
Seattle,
or Washington State.
And they go to Washington State and they live in Seattle on an island with a boat or whatever. Yeah. And then they don't have to pay these taxes and you can only be in the state.
I'm actually happy to pay taxes.
Just
feel
pay
like
your taxes, people.
You know, Apple, and this was Stiglitz's point, Apple is benefiting from our education system, from our roads, from every bit of infrastructure that was paid for by taxation, but not giving back its fair share.
I mean, if you took all the Marvel characters and you incorporate and you put all your Marvel trademarks in, the X-Men in
Dublin,
and then you said like, oh yeah, no, all the money goes back there. It kind of feels cheap, and it feels like
unfair. But it's almost impossible to imagine a company making that decision to say, okay, let's see, what's the most we could pay in taxes?
Right.
How could we arrange our whole business so that we pay
my tax
billions
lawyer,
and billions of dollars
Stephen
of our,
Moskowitz of our, always said,
of our shareholders,
never pay a penny more than you have to, pay a penny less than you need to.
Yep. Something like that.
It's a legal issue. It's a lawmaker issue, and they have to get it straight now.
They got to fix it. But you can imagine the lobbying that's going on, and frankly, sad to say, the bags of money that are being transferred to keep that law the way it is. It's a lot cheaper to buy a congressperson than to pay taxes.
Or in the Russians' case, to back Trump.
You want to talk about that?
It seems pretty – well, I mean, the hacking angle
is valid.
The hacking angle is pretty valid. I mean, the Russians
– So I think it's widely agreed now by U.S. law enforcement that the Russians did, in fact, hack the DCC, the Democratic Committee.
Yep. Yeah, and why? I guess what's the why here?
They got emails. They released those emails. I mean, I don't think that I'm saying anything that is still conspiracy theory. They released those emails to WikiLeaks.
Yep.
Julian Assange, in an interview several months ago, said, I have explosive material, but I'm going to hold on to it.
Mm. I hate that guy.
Because he doesn't like Clinton. He said, I'm going to hold on to it. And I'm going to time it for release right before the Democratic convention.
It's a horrible person. I hate Assange. I mean, it just...
Why do you hate Assange? I mean, WikiLeaks has done some great stuff.
Here's the thing.
We owe WikiLeaks a lot.
Here's the thing. When you are encouraging people to do data dumps, I think if you're going to encourage the world to be open and transparent this way and dump all this data, you're going to need to think about the fallout from it and the collateral damage.
Why? Why should he worry about that? His job is to get the information out there.
Job defined by who? I just think on an ethical basis, you have to think, if I'm going to jump...
That's what Snowden says. Snowden's problem with WikiLeaks is it's uncurated.
He said, uncurated.
When I had my information, what I decided to do is to hand it to several, not one, but several journalistic entities.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
And let them curate it.
Yeah, you got to think it through. And I think Assange is a bit of an anarchist.
He must be because
I think he's there's probably some
stuck in the Ecuadorian embassy
because of the allegations of attacking
rape.
Women, rape allegations, and this idea that you're going to just dump all this information and the people who might be informants on the other side of it or the people who gave it to you, like Chelsea Manning, are going to pay the price for it.
That's a very sad story, by the way.
Sad
Chelsea
story.
Manning now.
You know, who is probably, you know, by all accounts, like a very emotional,
she's suicidal, at this
suicidal
point.
Perhaps even mentally ill before this all happened.
Looks like she'll have solitary confinement for the rest of her life.
Right.
Because
of it. And she could have been mentally ill when she was, you know, sad. Gave him all this information and then he took advantage of her or him.
Yeah,
at the
that
time.
Information was valuable. I mean,
it was valuable
us
to
what...
Assange as a grandstander to, yeah. you know, and then to release it all and who knows. What informants in, you know, were murdered based upon it. So I just think this idea that the world is better if we just dump all information publicly is a bad argument.
It's a philosophy that I think you could.
It's a dangerous philosophy.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous philosophy. If I could tell you, here's all the informants of every FBI and CIA informant, here's the file, what would you do with it?
Yeah.
Would you just dump it on the internet? No reasonable person would do that. Who would do that? A douche who is like a grandstanding and wants to be famous,
right.
Which is what I think Julian Assange is. Sorry, it's my point.
I think there isn't a whole lot of evidence. They are dumping all the information. The fact that they withheld information and timed it to go after a political enemy of Julian Assange personally makes me think that if they did uncover information that was counter to their political aspirations or whatever, they would sit on it.
That's the beauty of being an anarchist, though.
You can choose. Yeah, I think Mike. It's a brilliant point. Mike's right. If this were to work against him and keep him in the Ecuadorian embassy longer, he'd be like, oh, just delete that file, right? So this idea.
You think he's doing that?
Well,
I don't know.
Occam's razor.
He's demonstrated the willingness to use. Control of this leaked information for political gain, for personal vendettas, whatever you want to call it, and that opens up a can of worms. It's not based on a philosophy of, okay, get everything, find everything we can and get everything out there as soon as we can. That's not his philosophy, we just learned.
Yeah.
Although a lot of people point out, in fact, there's even a conspiracy theory that Twitter killed the trending topic DNC leaks, that the attention is being paid to the hack, to the leaks and not to the contents, right? And so it deflects from the story. Should we, this isn't really a tech topic exactly, but should we put aside the source of the content and pay attention to the content?
Well, I mean, I think it is a tech topic to say, what do these platforms that mitigate a lot of our communication, do they have their thumbs on the scale and are they filtering what we see? Facebook obviously filters everything you see. They decide what's right. in your feed. Twitter was supposed to not do that. They're trending now. Twitter feels like a left-leaning organization. Facebook kind of feels like they're manipulating all
you know,
the results.
This result of this, though, is, and this I really worry about, is a general mistrust of all information. And at this point, I think what a lot of people do is they just believe whatever they want to believe and assume that I am being, by the way, that was a great ad on the right of that one. They just assume that completely distracted me. I've lost my train of thought.
I missed the ad.
Yeah, don't show it again.
Yeah.
That's why I use an ad blocker, by the way, for the show. We got to put an ad blocker on that.
A friend of mine, because of retargeting, says he visits.
That was a story. That's the problem. Taboola and Outbrain and these guys.
Oh, my God, the
it's
worst.
It's stories, so you can't block it. I completely lost my train of
what my friend does
making
is.
Making a good point, too.
My friend told me he searches for bikinis on Amazon. So that when he goes and surfs
he'll
the rest of the
nice
web,
content.
All the ads is targeted to him as bikinis. It's literally what my friend told me last week. I was like, that's bizarre. But back to the fairness point of the world. If the world feels unfair, I think people don't have hope, then they're like, okay, I'm going to believe the narrative that the whole system is rigged. And, you know, the Clintons have played the political game so hard for so long that it's not unreasonable to think that there is an entire machine to get them elected to keep the status quo that works against the poor and the middle class. And, I mean, listen, if you're taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from Goldman Sachs as your speaking gigs, that feels true. And then, you know, if you look at all the leaks, you know, people said, hey, maybe Saudi Arabia was somehow involved in 9/11. That seemed crazy.
You get this deep cynicism, though, that ends up being, destructive, anarchic, nihilistic. You become a nihilist because... Well, everything sucks.
And then it turns out
nothing's true.
Maybe the Saudis, you know, the report comes out that, there's 28 pages.
Nothing in there.
Well, that maybe like low-level Saudis were involved. But now it's like, is the world not prepared to deal with the fact that low-level Saudis could have been involved in 9/11, but that doesn't mean the Saudi government backed 9/11. And these are very hard times to understand what's going on in the world, because we have partial information.
Most people and much of the electorate just gives up.
Yeah, that's
why the most nihilistic
thing you
can do.
We're in the
right?
burn it down moment. People are going to. I believe Trump's going to win, and I believe he's going to win because people want to see the system collapse, and they believe he's the quickest way to collapse the system.
I believe they're right.
The two-party system I'm referring to, not America.
I don't know. I think he could actually burn the country down.
Well, he could, but I don't think that's people's intent in voting for him.
Not.
Just like the Brexit, the intent was not to destroy, you know, the
it's
UK.
Similar to Brexit, yeah.
But the Brexit was to, you know.
Now we are getting political.
Yes.
So we'll deviate from that. Yeah. But this is where it's difficult for us, because a lot of the stories nowadays are tech stories, are political stories. There is a very
world is being mitigated by tech. Look at the
tech is changing everything.
WikiLeaks is a tech enabled project.
Yeah.
The trending topics on Twitter, Facebook having its thumb on the scale. You know, all this stuff is being mitigated by the big technology companies that we use every day.
Okay.
Wow.
Kanye West wants a meeting between Tim Cook and Jay-Z. Should we do that story to end a beef?
Yeah, but don't show his tweets.
I'm going to skip it.
That kid is crazy.
Here's a great site, though, as long as we're talking about Apple results. Somebody did this called everysecond.io, and it shows how much Apple makes, sells every second. So if you go to the page, like in the 10 seconds I've been talking about it, 72 iPhones, 16 iPads, 7 Macs were sold, 5 Apple Watches, 5 iPad Pros, $110,000 in revenue. It's been 18 seconds. It's now been 20 seconds, $29,000 in profit, 18,000 app downloads, 6,000 iTunes downloaded, $16,000 spent on the App Store, 13 million iMessages sent in the last 30 seconds, 7,000 FaceTime calls, 281,000 Apple Maps queries. This gives you some idea of the scale of Apple's operation. I love this page.
Yeah, who will be the trillion-dollar company first is the big discussion. I think it's
Elon wants to be the trillion-dollar.
It's going
to
be Amazon first.
Amazon's.
If you're not competing with Amazon right now,
credit
you will
to
be.
Credit to Neil Agarwal for creating that site. It's everysecond.io. Amazon announced something kind of interesting this quarter. It's hired. In the past year, what was it, 80? Let me see if I can find it.
That was 25,000 people.
In the quarter?
In the quarter.
85,000 in the year.
Huge.
It grew like 47% in 1 year. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You got to keep in mind, though, these are not developers.
This
or 100,000.
There's
a lot of fulfillment. And there's some part-time. But how many people in the audience here are Amazon Prime members? Raise your hand if you have Amazon Prime.
Everybody.
Raise your hand if you don't have Amazon Prime.
One person, two people in the whole.
Oh, but you're a couple.
Oh,
so
you're a couple.
You're sharing
but
it.
You have it.
And this dude is a nihilist who doesn't shop, right? You're anti.
Why don't you have Amazon Prime? You have an Apple Watch.
I'm not from America.
He's not,
oh,
from,
not from America.
America.
All right, it's a commie.
Where are you from?
Australia.
Oh,
Australia.
Okay. Did they have Amazon Prime there? Did they have Amazon?
No. Well, then we got to rule you out because you couldn't get it if you wanted it.
I believe Amazon. They said they want to make it financially irresponsible for you not to have Amazon Prime.
I think at this point it is.
And I think it pretty much is. Considering
can you get Amazon Prime in France, Mike? What do you do now?
No, you can't. But, you know, this is a mega trend for us all to be looking at, because there are so many different technologies that are going to make things so cheap that you can't not afford to do it. So Amazon is one of them. We talked about self-driving cars. And you can, you know, when you go on vacation, the car goes off and makes you a bundle and pays for itself. And then you get profits from it. There's going to be so many tech. I interviewed the guy behind the FarmBot. I don't know if we've talked about the FarmBot on Twit, but it's a farming robot, and he believes that within 3 years he's going to get this farming robot to be $1,000, and it will produce about $1,200 or $1,300 worth of produce each year. So in less than a year, it pays for itself, and I think there are so many areas where this is going to be the case. Look at solar power that Elon is working on. It's going to get to the point.
It's a CNC farming machine. Is that wild?
Yeah. Yeah, this is an awesome, awesome project. It's completely open source. There's a cloud open source software platform. There's an open source hardware platform. He got triple their funding goal on Kickstarter. And what this robot does is it plants the seeds, it waters them, it monitors the soil, it does everything in a very exact way, And the ultimate goal is for you not ever to even touch a garden.
Holy cow. Isn't Elon's brother all in? He said
Kimball is
the future of VC is food.
Yeah, yes. I mean, people consume a lot of it. And Kimball Musk is he has a great restaurant called The Kitchen, if you're ever in Boulder. And he's got a couple of other locations. And he really pioneered farm to table and locally sourced stuff. He's doing a what he calls community gardening. So he's got a program called The Kitchen Community Gardens. And they basically are donating these gardens to schools and to communities. And this kind of farm bought open source stuff. This is where jobs are going to be replaced.
Are you looking to invest in these kinds of things?
While we were talking, I just wrote down FarmBot, and I'm like, literally, I was like, thanks, Mike. I'm going to give that person $100,000 and give Mike carry.
Yeah. Well, why should he? He wrote an article about it.
If I invest in it, I'm going to give you 10% of whatever I make.
Thank you.
Leo, nothing for you.
I'm the middleman.
Leo, nothing
here.
For you.
I'm the maven.
Zero
for
Leo.
I connected you guys.
Zero for, all right, you know what?
No, I don't want anything. I don't want your money.
I'm going to invest in it right now. I'm going to give you each 10% of the carry. 10% of my carry.
I'd have to move it to Estonia. I don't even know what that means. What's your carry? What does that mean?
A carry is defined as if you invest $100,000 and you turn it into $1 million, there's $900,000 in profit.
Ah.
If I were to invest your money.
Oh, you mean profit?
The 900 profit, the carry would be 20% of the 900.
Ah.
So in other words, 180,000.
It's getting smaller by the minute.
So the carry is if you invest other people's money, you get a percentage of the gain. You get nothing if it's lost.
Got it. That's a good deal.
So you get a percentage of it. Yeah. But what's really interesting about this crowdfunding is, you know, they beat the crowdfunding
By 7 times.
Now, 7X. The next piece is equity crowdfunding is occurring now. So Title III was just passed in May.
The jobs bill.
And now what this person could do is they could take each of those equity people who backed it, and when the product comes out, they could say, would you like to buy one share? And for up to $1 million a year, they could then let civilians who buy that unit for, let's say it's $500, they could say, hey, would you like to give $501 and get a share?
Used to be prevented, the theory being if you don't have a lot of disposable income, you don't have A, the knowledge, and B, the disposable income to be investing.
Yeah, there's two types of investors, accredited, non-accredited. Accredited have over $1 million or so and over 200,000 of cash.
You could afford to lose.
You could afford to lose it. Now they're saying non-accredited people can go put small amounts of money into these things. So the world is going to accelerate because individuals are smart. The crowd is smart. Crowdfunding proved that with the Pebble Watch and other things. Yep. They can also make mistakes, but the crowd will take these chances, and a lot of people, many hands makes for light work. If many people put in $100 to this farm bot, you get 1 million people in the world to do that.
Wow.
And there's billions of people on the planet. Holy cow, you could have some entrepreneur who proves some things, get $100 million. And in Australia, crowdfunding is becoming a very big thing, equity crowdfunding, correct? It's a lot of talk.
Because it's legal. It's been legal there forever.
So an airline crowdfunded another plane to set up a route. And so people got to own shares in the company.
That's brilliant.
Because they're like, hey, we can't afford this plane. And then people are like, well, we want this route. They're like, okay, if you want the route,
just
give us
some money to Chris Christie and it's good.
Yeah, we'll block some tunnels for you.
Yeah. Whoa. All right, we're going to take a break while Jason mops up the oil spill here.
All good. Let's do a commercial.
Our show today brought to you by, hey, you're talking money. If you're a developer, if you've got an app or if you've got a website, show me the money. That's the magic here. You've got to have e-commerce. If you got to have e-commerce, you're going to go where, a couple ways to do this. You could write it yourself. Don't. This is, not a trivial operation doing this. A lot of work for you. And the security hazards, it's fraught with risk, not to mention the fact that if you write your own wonky shopping cart, our shopping cart abandonment rate is already 70%. It's only going to get worse. Do what the big guys do. Do what Uber did, Lyft, Airbnb, Hotels Tonight, GitHub. They all use Braintree. You see those buyable pins, the Pinterest buyable pins? That's Braintree, BraintreePayments.com. One simple integration gives you every kind of payment period, everything from pounds to PayPal, from credit cards to Apple Pay to Android Pay. And when the next big one comes along, maybe it's Ethereum, you'll be ready because they'll add it to the code. You go to your control panel, you check the box, boom, it's in. All you have to do is update a few lines of code. No late nights, no complicated recoding, no stress about staying ahead of the curve, and great fraud protection, fast payouts,
a very reasonable fee. In fact, your first, what was it, $50,000 worth of payments fee-free. Kind of like a little nest egg.
There's no minimums or monthly fees. So they're not like trying to grind you down. All my startups use it. It's a fantastic product.
Well, boy, that's thank you. No, Jason. That's about the best endorsement I've ever heard.
When you're an investor, you want every dollar to go in the product. If everybody has to rebuild the payment stuff, then all of a sudden it's like the old days when you had to set up web servers. It's like, oh my God, the startup doesn't write one line of code until month three when the sysadmins have put the racks up.
Right.
This is the same thing. It saves literally 3 to 6 months for every startup.
It's another one of our sponsors, DigitalOcean. It's like the DigitalOcean for payments, right?
For sure, for sure.
It's just do
this
it.
This is why startups can get done. You know, amazing. Things like the FarmBot can get done because a lot of the infrastructure has been done by great companies like Braintree.
We live in amazing times. Take advantage of it. Brain, tell your boss, your product manager, you do it. Whoever needs to make the decision, go to BraintreePayments.com/twit.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget to let them know you heard about it on Twit and that Jason sent you.
It's
you don't
amazing.
Have to. You are Jason. This is nice.
You're at Jason
on Twitter.
And Instagram.
Yeah, but nobody thinks Jason Schwartzman when they say, always you.
Statham, yeah.
There's Statham, but there's also
Schwartzman.
I get that
a lot, but that's more body type. You know what I'm saying? Statham and I, it's like a body type thing.
Notice, he preferred to be compared to Statham than Schwartzman.
Bateman.
Okay.
I got Tumblr right as Tumblr became irrelevant.
Jason.tumblr.com. Jason.tumblr.com. I have Leo.tumblr.com, and I get messaged every day. Usually teenagers. I gotta, what are you not doing anything with that Leo? Could you give it to me?
You wouldn't believe how many people try to get Jason on Instagram.
Oh, I bet.
Constant. All day long.
I bet. But yeah. You are the Jason.
I want to get Jason.com.
And he is the Mike Elgin.
That's right.
What? It's not MikeElgin.com anymore. Where do people go?
It's Elgin.com. Elgin.com is a good place to go. You know, the funny story about first names, back in the 90s, I lived in Los Gatos and wanted to get Kevin.com for my son, Kevin, and found out some guy owned it and contacted him, and he was a neighbor. He lived right down the street.
He said he
would never give up Kevin.com, but he lived right there. I mean, it was such an amazing
coincidence, huh? And you never didn't get it. You know, so I registered. I was actually telling this story on the radio show earlier. I registered AbbyLaporte.com and HenryLaporte.com when they were born. And I did a 20-year registration.
Perfect.
And I had to renew it because they still weren't interested at the age of 20. But Abby now is 24. And she's been calling me to read me her papers. And I say, Abby, you need to start posting stuff on the internet. It's very important you be proactive.
Yeah.
I've got AbbyLaporte.com. We'll set you up with Squarespace. And that way, when people Google your name, it won't be the stuff other people posted. It'll be your stuff, and it'll be your best stuff. You'll show your best side. And I think this is an important message to get out to everybody. If you're a kid, start posting your medals, your drawings, your best writing. Because if you don't do it, somebody else will do it for you. And it will be the picture of you drunk on New Year's Eve or throwing up or whatever. You don't want that.
Words of wisdom.
I'm just saying. I love this picture, by the way, that is on Mike's Instagram. Please, this is actually, you put this on a post you did on Google Plus. Is Google Plus losing its steam? Please leave the nozzle unattended at a gas station. And I think that somebody erased the do not, and they added no to por favor deja la manguera descuidada.
People have no idea how far ahead Google is with this AI stuff.
You think Google Plus is the future of AI?
No, Google Plus is another one of their failed little experiments. Yeah. But their AI stuff, since they bought DeepMind, and
really, you have some inside knowledge. It sounds like you want to share something with us here.
No, it's just that they're very far ahead. You know, maybe 5 years ahead of everybody, or 10 years ahead.
So we're talking about
the amount of data they have is crazy.
You're talking about the first $1 trillion company, Amazon.
I think it's Amazon.
First breakthrough in artificial intelligence, deep learning. You think Google?
Oh, of course. I mean, not
Facebook.
No. Now, Facebook is, you know, they're so laser focused on monetization and advertising, and they're crushing it on that front. That's why they're printing money. And, you know, they may actually catch up to Google's money printing machine.
Google had a very strong quarter, surprisingly strong.
They're just, Google and Facebook are just everything in advertising. And there's a couple of wonky things that are occurring. One of them is retargeting, which I think everybody knows. If you go to one site, you search for something on Amazon, you see that ad forever.
Like your friend who searched for bikinis?
He searched for bikinis and sees bikini all over the world, all over the internet. The next piece is there's a level of targeting that people don't understand.
Why do I keep getting belly fat ads then?
Stop searching for donuts, Leo.
Leo's what have I done?
Bacon donuts. Stop Googling maple bacon donuts. No, what's really interesting, though, is...
You're probably right. The level,
because I see it in some of my startups. They're doing multi-layered, multi-stage retargeting. So let me just explain what this is to a civilian. Okay, you know when you do a Google search or a Facebook... you see those Facebook ads all over the web. It's retargeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now... let's say you click through on the maple bacon donut and you go to the, Dunkin' Donuts website.
Yeah.
Now they know you visited the Dunkin' Donuts website.
Oh, dear.
They've targeted you a second time.
Yep.
Then they know
building up a whole profile.
It's unbelievable. And so what
I'm
will
never
going to
stop getting belly fat
people
ads.
Like, you have Casper as one of the
mattresses. Yeah. Mattresses. Yep, yep.
Let's say the better example would be Casper with the retargeting. You go to Casper one time.
Yeah.
And you picked one and you said, oh, let me click on the king size bed.
Right.
Now the next time you are on Facebook or another website, it puts you in the second bucket in the funnel, which is you clicked on king size and it says, hey, would you like to close your purchase for the king size or would you like to send us something about your king size? Then if you
put
it in the shopping cart.
You know how creepy people feel this is? This is why people hate tracking. They think it's creepy.
It's unbelievable. Well, and what's happening is the advertising on the internet went from being – oh, I put an ad up on the internet and 100% of people saw it on this website. Now it's like, oh, no. Just this group of people. People who went to Casper and put this in the...
Right.
And I don't know that Casper's doing this, but all the major companies are.
Everybody's doing it.
You put it in your shopping cart. Now you're part of that group. Now the interesting thing that happens is something called similar audiences. So now they say, okay, Jason and Leo both have a Model X. They both visited the Tesla site. They both visited this. They both did this Google search. Now can we find other people like Jason and Leo who also own Teslas, who also live in Northern California? And that's where advertising is going supernova. And that's why they're printing money over Facebook is similar audiences. So I can take a
list. Does Google wants to have that
Google
information?
Google has it too. So what happens is you upload if I upload 1,000 emails of people who own Teslas to Facebook or Google, it'll find other people who are similar and likely to own one. So all these marketers are uploading their mailing lists, your email, to
and
Facebook.
Matching it.
They hash it, they match it, they find other similar people. So this idea of wasted advertising dollars is going away.
That's both good and bad. I mean, if you're a television network, the old saw was, I know half of my ad dollar is wasted, I just don't know which half. You're really living in ignorance. When Ford buys $1 million campaign or a $10 million campaign on NBC, they don't know.
Yeah,
they do research, but that's after the fact. And I'll be honest with you, most podcast advertising is direct response because at least that's some idea that it's working. That's why we always, it's twit.tv/Casper or whatever it is. But it's still not a perfect science compared to what you just described.
Yeah. I mean,
should I be worried?
No.
I'm never going to give that kind of information.
They're totally going to work. They'll still be influencer marketing and they'll still be branding. But
it's going to be a fraction, though, of the big buy.
It'll be blended. But the point is Google and Facebook are going to have so much money based on this that they're going to be able to do all these crazy moonshots.
They had a very big quarter in mobile, and that's, of course, critical, the transition from desktop to mobile, since everybody's using mobile these days.
Yep.
Alphabet stock took a big jump thanks to it. The market was very happy. Facebook also said its second quarter profit tripled year over year, $2.1 billion in profit, beating Wall Street.
It's insane.
Again, mobile, 84% of Facebook's profit of its advertising sales, 84% was on mobile. So that was when Facebook went public, that was the big question mark. Can they transition to mobile? And a lot of people didn't buy Facebook stock thinking, they can never make this transition. They've never shown any ability to do it. Well, they have clearly shown.
This is the big mistake I made with Facebook was, and a lot of companies is, you look at the product they currently have and you say that won't work and you might be right. But then you have the team that figures
it out. You underestimate Mark Zuckerberg.
I did.
You buy stock in Facebook, you were buying stock in Mark. Really.
100%. Yeah. And the same thing with this is why people underestimated Tesla, too. It's like, Elon Musk is just such a machine at, he sets the goal so high that even if he misses the goal by 10%, he still outpaced Volvo by 1,000x.
You'd think you'd know that because every VC says you're investing in the team, not the idea.
It just takes time to actually have these lessons change your behavior.
Yeah.
It's very hard to fold aces. You know, even if the board comes down with three hearts.
Back to Facebook, though, and Google, the other thing that is interesting, it's hard to even remember now, not only was it a question as to whether Facebook could really make an impact on mobile, it was a question whether mobile could actually become a viable form of lucrative advertising. Of course, that is clear now. And the other factor that both Facebook and Google are emphasizing strongly, both about current performance and the future, is the power of video and video advertising.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so video is so huge. I can't wait until Google comes out with its mobile live streaming feature, which now I think still only five people can use it, but essentially Facebook Live for YouTube on a mobile device. That's going to be huge. I'm curious to see how live streaming video is going to, first of all, how are they going to handle it, and also how they're going to monetize it.
All these companies, YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, think this is the next big thing. They're all investing heavily in it. This is an interesting graph. The revenue, so 64% of Google's revenue is mobile. Ad revenue made up $19 billion of its revenue, $2.2 billion from other Google revenue. I don't know what it would be other, maybe, I don't know.
It would be the App Store, and it would be like Google Docs. And people paying for those
apps.
Then
the bets, the moonshots, $0.2 billion.
Yeah, not going to be anything off that. That's like Nest, I think, and other stuff there.
Although they were happy in the in their annual report. They were happy with Nest's performance, right?
I think they're probably happy because they got Tony Fadell out. He was a bit of a disaster there. I mean, his inability to manage people was just legendary. And back to Mike's piece about the dog food being unavailable and the dogs being hungry. Remember, the Nest was turning off, and then people were like waking up, and it was freezing cold.
Firmware update that broke it.
Yeah, and so you know, this, as the stakes go up, people have to change their behavior. If you're running, a lab for blood, and this is a good pickup from a conversation we had months ago.
Yeah.
You know, remember we were saying, hey, this feels like a complete fraud. This feels like this is going to be a disaster. And here we are 6 months later after we had that original conversation, and she's been banned for 2 years.
Yeah. CDC, the FDA, one of the health government health organizations said you can't do tests anymore.
It's a humorless group. They're there to protect people. It's not a joke with them.
We don't appreciate
it. But HBO isn't humorless, and they became a punchline very quickly on Silicon Valley. You caught that. They accidentally, one of the people on the startup team in Silicon Valley got a user farm to fake user.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And the founder, the CEO, Richard, was like, well, it's not like we're Theranos. We're not like that bad.
Did they actually say that out loud?
Pulling a Theranos is like, Theranos it.
Yeah.
It basically means you've like really effed up.
Is she going to jail?
Honestly,
investigating, right?
Yeah, I mean,
she's been punished enough.
No, disagree 100%. The level of denial and attacking the press over this was deranged.
You blame Elizabeth Holmes? 100%.
100%. I mean, all this leadership stuff starts at the top. Every organization has a leader. She's the leader. And she created this culture of secrecy and this culture of lying and deception.
But she wore black turtlenecks.
It's deranged. It's so deranged that they're making a movie about it, and the story's not even finished. You know, just think about it. Just let that set in. Like, Hollywood's like, my God.
It's the same guy who did Spotlight, right?
I think that might be right, which was a great film. Anyway, deranged.
Deranged.
Is the word I would use. It's just
I often do wonder when you see these kind of like the Bernie Madoffs of the world, and I think she's probably in that category at this point, is what's motivating them? Don't they know they will get caught eventually? Is it self-destructive? Is it, what's going on in their heads? I always wonder. How does somebody become evil? Nobody thinks they're evil, right? Everybody thinks they're justified, that they're doing the right thing. I think.
Says the guy sitting in the Dr. Evil chair.
We're all good people, aren't we?
Yeah, there are clues, Leo.
My gut tells me that, you start cutting corners and then you get caught in this trap. And then
it's the Breaking Bad story. Where you're an innocent high school science teacher and
gotta pay the mortgage.
It all goes to hell. Yeah.
Or as somebody said in the chat room, it's like sociopaths do not think like we do. They look at the world transactionally. They look at people transactionally. They don't think of the fallout of their behaviors.
I would submit, though, if they're really truly looking at transactionally, they would make the calculus that this is going to be hard to get away with at some point. I can't do this forever.
How long did Bernie Madoff? How many decades?
Oh, a long time.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think it's kind of like a gambling addiction or something like
it's
that.
It's addictive.
I mean, I think that
no
a lot of people with addictions that never end well are able to delude themselves and
how's
just go
for the
next...
How's the poker career going, by the way?
I am doing so well this year.
You can't lose, can you?
I had 2 years where I just got demolished, and then this year I'm literally
crushing. Well, that's what happens. You're learning how to play, right? That was your investment.
Yeah, you learn, and it's one of those costly things. But what I've learned about gambling is, like, there are people who gamble because of the chemical experience, like the ups and the downs, and I think they get as much release from being down and then catching back up and getting to even as they do going up. There's a group of people who should not gamble. Let me just leave it that way. And then, you know what? I think some people don't gamble enough. Like, you think about people who are so conservative with their wealth and they don't actually make any bets. That's why I think, back to the title through crowdfunding, you know, the average consumer, how many people here used Facebook, LinkedIn, or Uber in the first year? How many people use either any of those services? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, half the audience used one of those three services. How many people knew that that service was going to be a hit? Like, one of them did.
Yeah.
So if one of those five people had made that bet, they would be worth $100 million right now, or $10 million right now.
If they had the money to make that bet,
well,
too.
If they made a $1,000 bet, they had the money,
right?
So, and that's what Title III will allow them to do.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of people out there who could look at a product.
But 99 times out of 100, you're wrong.
Right, but then the applied odds, if you get paid back $5,000, makes the bet worth doing.
Incidentally, tomorrow, Elizabeth Holmes will be in the news because she's going against the advice of her lawyer and actually presenting at a major medical conference. She is going to, by the way, Jennifer Lawrence will be playing her in that movie, which I think is perfect casting. She's, and this will be definitely, the writers will be watching with great interest. She'll be presenting
the technology.
Theranos' technology at this event tomorrow.
Yeah, she said she was going to do this in August.
Yeah.
So
under fire from all sides, Holmes finally accepted the invitation from the American Association for Clinical Chemistry to present at this year's conference tomorrow in Philadelphia.
Maybe she's got the goods. Maybe the world doesn't understand.
Or this is, and see, this is my question, is she believes, right? Maybe she believes. Maybe she thinks she can get away with it. former assistant U.S. attorney in the Bay Area, Eric Havian, says two things come to mind. She's absolutely convinced she has nothing to worry about, and she's ignoring the advice of her lawyer.
Thinking.
Yeah. we'll see. Oh, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a good movie. Let's put it that way. So it's not if Jennifer Lawrence is playing it, it's not the spotlight people. Yeah, let me see. I'm going to find this because I don't want to misrepresent this. It's Adam McKay. Oh, he is. He didn't do Spotlight. He did The Big Short.
The Big Short, yeah.
It's The Big Short people.
It'd be really interesting if she comes out and she has this brilliant piece of technology that's just failed for 3 years and gave bad results. But suddenly, in the last 30 days, she fixed it, and it's working perfectly. And so sorry about
all
the wrong lab results for the past years. Sorry about that, but I figured it out, and it's going to change the world. I mean...
By the way, she was on the Forbes list with a net worth of $4.5 billion. Forbes now estimates her worth zero. Elizabeth Holmes, not Jennifer Lawrence.
I'm going to have to agree that Jennifer Lawrence is worth more than Elizabeth Holmes.
I think at this point. Google says that the reason they did so well this quarter, better than anybody expected, was they're reaping the rewards from the shift to mobile because companies are increasingly willing to advertise on smartphones.
Sure.
So they found the gold. They found the gold.
Slowly but surely, they're figuring out mobile.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
19% growth in advertising revenues.
Snapchat's going to be a big part of this story over the next couple of years, and I think it's a company that is not going to sell. They're going to go public next year, I think.
But you know who's not? Twitter. Twitter is having trouble monetizing.
That's a disaster. They've done okay monetization-wise. They're not growing. So if you're not growing and you've maxed out and you've made a decent amount of money, they basically have squeezed as they've put the throttle as they've turned the lever as hard as they can to get revenue. they haven't figured out how to grow the user base, and the trolling and the banning of, you know, the right wing crazy people and the trolling going on and celebrities, you know, being upset about people trolling them. The whole thing is sort of devolving. And I think Jack's the wrong leader right now, because he's a very left, like not even keeled leader in terms of that regard. So I think they need to get rid of Jack at this point and get somebody in there who can run it as a platform, because picking who gets to have what speech is a huge mistake.
Yeah.
A huge mistake. Because once you pick a side...
Banning Nero, in other words. You're talking about banning Nero.
Well, I mean, they've banned a bunch of people, and they're just arbitrating. And I'm not saying I support Milo at all. I mean, I don't. And I don't, so I don't support any, you know, people attacking people or being violent towards people, obviously, or any of that stuff.
But banning him was a mistake because
well, here's the thing.
It makes them an arbiter.
They're making them the arbiter. So if... If he makes fun of somebody's grammar or he tells them they have a terrible movie and he attacks a celebrity, you know what? That's freedom of speech. Go for it. Yeah. It's fine. The problem is they're claiming that—
Even if it's
that,
racist?
The terms of service should not allow for racism and hate speech. But then again, you have on the other side, and this is where once you start getting into speech, you have a big problem. Because now it's up to interpretation. So then
interpretation
if
is difficult.
Chris Rock makes a joke
right.
about, you know—
About white people.
About white people— Now we've got
to racist,
right? So now we've got to go through all of, you know, this racist.
So should they
group.
Not? Should they not edit anything?
If they were a platform and they said we're
everything
move
goes,
to real, they,
we're
they,
not going
to
block
have to
anything.
Go one, you have to go one way or the other. Either you have to say we're not going to block stuff, we're not going to interpret speech. If you have a problem with the terms of service. You know, we're going to go to law enforcement if you're being harassed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
and we're
going to
turn over
crime,
the information. Right?
That's different.
Yeah, but hate speech is hate speech. That's easy. The problem is, you know, he is trolling somebody and they kind of banned him for trolling. And then it's an anonymous platform. So the second you start doing this arbitration, then everybody launches 1,000 new accounts. The 1,000 new accounts then start trolling the person 10 times
right.
harder.
It's worse.
It's worse. What they have to do is move to real names. And
that
Facebook
solves it, by the way.
Solves it because if you look
solved
at Facebook,
it at Google Plus solved it at Facebook.
Right when you're
well,
when you're,
and then Google Plus backed off on it. So
yeah, but it was too late. It was too late. Oh. And by the way, aren't you noticing a resurgence of spam and other problems on Google Plus as that
Absolutely.
Policy went away? So I
Absolutely.
Think yeah, when people we do, but okay, so I'm of the same opinion that anonymity is what breeds this, and
yeah.
yet everybody says, and I guess I agree, you do need a place for. Whistleblowing, anonymous conversation. Where do you put that?
Yeah, I mean, that's why the World Wide Web exists, and anybody can put up a website at any time.
Right, that's always going to be anonymous.
And that's always going to be there. So on these other services that involve human beings, if you opt into Reddit allows for anonymity, there are going to be some ugly moments. Reddit right. has done an exceptional job of shutting down all of these really abhorrent subreddits. I don't know if you've noticed, but we don't hear about the horrible subreddits as much, right? Because they've actually started policing it. But it's a whack-a-mole situation. If Twitter just said, we're going real names, here's the path to... And remember I said they were going to open up verification? They opened up verification. So now verification is going to be a process that anybody can go through. I think they're doing exactly what I said they should do two years ago.
But we don't know
verify
if they're
everybody.
Grant verification.
What's that?
We don't know if they're grant verification, everyone. I agree. Essentially, verification should be not a badge for celebrities, but it should be a voluntary real names policy.
And that's what they're doing now. Right?
Yeah, they're doing exactly what I'm saying.
Are they?
Yeah,
are they,
you,
are
if
they
you
granting
send
it to
them,
everyone who applies?
That's what they're saying. They're saying if you, and there are, you know, you have to prove your, but they're going to give everybody the blue check mark as long as you request it and provide identification.
Yeah, they're just
and then what you could do. Then what you could do is, I guess, you could only look at verified Twitter.
That's
right?
What I said 2 years ago. Is listen, if you have to pick, either be a verified service like Facebook or not. If you want to go verified, let everybody get verified, and you can either put a way to get to the front of the line, so you can pay $10 to get to the front of the line, have everything verified, and then everybody else will be slowly verified, and then you can rat out people who are fake accounts. And if the account is fake and we can't find the real name of the person, they get put in the non-verified bucket. When you join the service, the default is either verified Twitter or Wild West Twitter.
Twitter announced this a couple of weeks ago, an online application process for Twitter accounts to receive verification status.
Yeah.
Verified accounts, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Our goal with
I know about that, but they I don't think they changed the. They still are looking for. You have to have a good reason.
You have to be a
be
creator or an influencer. You can't just be a man on the street
for now.
Exactly.
But the fact that they opened this up is phase one.
But you
phase
say that, Jason. But have they said that it's just for now? Have they said we're going to open this up to everybody who can verify themselves?
I'm telling you that they're going to do it.
Okay.
And then what? Does that make Mike? Does that make you feel better about Twitter?
It would make me feel better about Twitter, absolutely.
Yeah,
and
it's coming.
I think you know, so a bunch of things about Twitter. So first of all, I think that would help a lot. I also think, as I've said on other Twitch shows like Twig, I really think they need a way for you to delete other people's tweets and for the blocking to be more meaningful. And again, you can do that a lot better if you have real names.
Instagram just added that capability to comments on Instagram, right? There, you can now...
the spam on Instagram was out of control.
You can mediate it a little bit better. I mean, you can always delete a comment.
You can turn off comments just like you can on YouTube.
You can turn off comments now. Yeah.
Which is what celebrities will do because people are going into celebrities.
Oh, it's terrible. I see, you know, when Beyonce posts, it ends up being all spam, right? It's just,
it's a disaster.
So it says, this is what Twitter's saying for today. We approve account types maintained by accounts of public interest. That is music, acting, fashion, government, politics, religion, journalism, media, sports, business, and other key interest areas. So you need to have an account of public interest, and then you provide
it'll be everybody.
The information. And I guess there.
Why do you say it'll be everybody, Jason? What's the evidence for that?
Inside information.
Okay,
this is the plan.
I mean, I have a lot of inside information.
Are you an investor in Twitter?
No, I'm not. I predicted this, or I talked about it a year ago that they were going to open it up to everybody because I had inside information, and I have inside information that they're going to open it up. They're going to create a process, and I have information that they're going to
expand it.
Well, that's fantastic. It's like Christmas.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, Mike.
Yeah.
It's Christmas in July.
Well, I mean, if you're a journalist, you'll get it immediately. I mean, but
Are you verified on Twitter, Mike?
Yeah, just recently under the new plan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get verified for a long time, and then, you know, it's like talking to the wall. And then as soon as they opened this up, I applied. They granted me. Gave it immediately. And speaking of Twitter, I just very quickly want to give a shout out to Noble Ackerson, who's in the studio there. He's a friend of mine.
Hey, Noble.
Awesome. He's like the biggest and best glasshole there is. He's still a big glass.
He's not wearing glass right now, are you? No, what? Noble's not wearing glass. Why not? Really? What kind of glasshole are you? Huh? It's in the car.
He'll be a Magic Leaper soon. Magic Leaper soon.
I'm hearing some good things about Magic Leap. You know, we've actually mentioned this before that Kevin Kelly's, you know, kind of glowing article didn't really talk about the technology, but now people are starting to see it and starting to say, oh, there is something going on here.
I used the HoloLens. I was pretty impressed by that. I was more impressed than I thought I would be. It's a narrow field of view, but walking around and seeing objects in the real world.
I think augmented reality is exciting. And,
it's super exciting.
You know, Pokemon Go gives people a taste. We just had on new screensavers yesterday a new game called something. What was it? Father.io that is basically laser tag with augmented reality. You add a little laser tag receiver to your phone and you can run around shooting at people. And
Well, imagine just looking out in this audience here. If I could look out and see all
see
of
your
the,
names. I could see that was Noble.
Well, I could see your names.
Hey, look who's in studio today.
But imagine if I saw which Facebook friends we had in common.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Or if we the last time we interacted
on Twitter.
What
about stalking? Are you worried about that?
If you're worried about stalking at this point, you have not been paying attention.
You're not on Twitter.
I mean, look, again, back to the real world and legal stuff. Like it turns out like there's a small number of bad actors in the world. It might be a finite number of people. And because technology changes and the world changes, it doesn't mean that a bunch of people are going to go commit crime. They created these self-checkout, you know, at the Home Depot and stuff like that.
You could just walk out the door.
You could just walk out the door, yet people don't.
Right.
Right? Because most people
are
good, right? Most people are honest. So the fact is people can rob stuff. They don't because, you know, they're generally good people when we're raised
properly. You know who won't be robbing a 7-Eleven anytime soon? Mark Zuckerberg. I told you I wouldn't care about stock prices, but this you got to care about. His stock price went up so much he gained $3.4 billion in 1 hour.
He committed to giving all. He committed to giving all his money away. So
he's going
to
give it all away.
I give him a lot of credit.
He is now worth $56.7 billion, according to Forbes. He's the fifth richest person in the world, right behind Jeff Bezos, who's worth $64 billion, and a guy named Jason Calacanis,
who's worth nowhere near that.
Nowhere.
Trust me, if I was worth that, I would own the New York Knicks right now.
And I'd be sitting here with a little handout. You can just
absolutely.
Be a little bit, just, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
10 million, just a little bit.
Absolutely.
Just a little bit. What do you call
get
that?
Get your beak wet.
Get my beak wet.
What, I can't get my beak wet?
Is that what they say?
That's what when the mafia guys say.
Oh, yeah. I like
the
old taste.
No, like when if you can't get in a deal, it's like, hey, can I get my beef wet here? What's going on?
Come on, what's going on?
Let's sell something.
Let's sell some trackers. Look at these. Aren't these cool?
That?
These are trackers. Do you know about the tracker?
I don't know anything about
these. These are the new trackers. Hold on. Tracker is, of course, a great little a coin-sized device you put on your keys, your wallet, your computer. You even have they have a waterproof cover. You can put it on your pet. And it will pair to your iOS or Android device using Bluetooth LE, so it doesn't kill the battery. This goes
I
a year.
This.
Yeah. And you have two-way separation. So if you leave your keys behind, your phone notifies you. If you leave your phone behind, then you press the button on the tracker. Your phone starts screaming, even if it's silenced. Mm. 1.5 million devices out there right now. That's the Leo Laporte tracker.
I like that. It's got your little photo.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. They just sent these to us. I don't. It's a little strange. Here's a Twit tracker. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. So get a bunch of them.
Great for
and
keys.
With the crowdsource, I think this is really brilliant because obviously Bluetooth only goes about 100 feet, right? So once you get 100 feet away, you don't get updates. But everybody who has trackers and the tracker software is always looking for trackers out in the world. So if somebody walks by your keys, their phone, there's how many trackers there are. Their phone will notify you.
You know what I want to do with this?
I saw your keys. It's on the beach.
Forget about my keys. I have the greatest idea.
What should you put it on?
I'm going to buy 10 of these. I'm going to put them in my luggage.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
So put it in my backpack luggage. If it ever goes missing,
the people will let you know.
I can go find it.
You get an alert on your phone.
Last time I was on Twitter, if you remember, I gave you one. Here, you want one of these?
Yeah.
I put it in my backpack, and it's been fantastic. Unfortunately, my backpack hasn't been stolen yet. But
the proof of concept. We're waiting for the proof of concept. Just remember, when you're in Marseille, you don't want to do the Apache dance.
Don't do that.
I do not.
Don't let the Marseille police, the gendarmerie, will track down your tracker. They also just introduced something new. Well, I like this called Tracker Atlas. So you might say, oh, I know my keys are in the house, but where? The Tracker Atlas lets you pinpoint your items on a customizable floor plan of your house. Oh, and it doesn't just work with Tracker. It works with all of these Bluetooth tracker devices. So
it's genius.
Genius.
I was just I left my iPad in a hotel and I literally had
terrible
find
feeling.
My iPhone
yeah.
and I actually saw I turned it on and I saw it move and I called security and they're like, yeah, we have it, we're going to send it to you.
Nice.
And so this lets you do it for everything, right?
Everything.
Not just your iPad or iPhone, you can do it for every device.
Think of it that way. It's like find your iPhone on everything.
Right? It's amazing.
Go to thetracker.com. You'll never lose your possessions again. Plus,
there's no monthly fee, right?
No fee.
You just buy it. And
you just buy it. Okay. And you're going to get 30% off your order, your entire order. Order 10 when you use the offer code TWIT.
Love it.
Thetracker.com. The hardest thing to find is actually the website because they spell it funny. TheTracker.com. That'll be the last.
The tracker without the E
at the end.
Yeah, like Flickr. Yeah, no E.
Yeah, like Flickr.
TheTracker.com. KR.com.
Yeah. Promo code TWIT. For 30% off, and I don't know if – I think you can get customized trackers like this.
Yeah, you can.
It's genius. That's good for kids and the kid stuff.
And if you have a teenager who's trying to find themselves, it's a great way for them to do that as well.
So if you're at Disneyland
– I lost it. I have to get it. Excuse me. I'm not hitting on you. I just dropped it.
Ow.
All right.
Don't stop.
There we go. Hey, let's take a little break for a commercial. Here, it's not really a commercial. It's a
promo.
It's a house ad. It is a little summary of some of the things you might have missed if you missed a minute this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit,
we already got the newest augmented reality game. It's laser tag. Only you're looking at real people shooting at real people with
super
your
cool
with
stuff.
Your camera phone. Hey, who's shooting at me?
Oh, sorry.
Home theater. Geeks.
I can handle the show.
This week's guest geeks are Scott Wilker, founder and CEO of a company called Sonic Blocks.
So what we started with was this modular concept where we would separate all the essential parts and pieces. And we designed this exoskeleton that you can also pop onto it. And every face of that cube has a place where you can decide what type of drivers you want in this system. Users and consumers can have a very long life of technology available to them that doesn't go obsolete.
Tech news today.
If you hate picking up dog poop, there's an app for scat. An app called Pooper for iOS is for those dog owners too lazy to pick up Trixie's mess in the park. Think of it as the Uber for doggy poopers.
Twit. Tech just like you like it.
And, you know, it's not like, actually that big of a deal. Take a plastic bag. Yeah. You're done.
Yeah. Yep, just throw it over your shoulder and you're done.
I knew that was fake.
It had to be a hoax, actually.
Please don't. Is it a hoax?
It had to be a hoax.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was a hoax.
Because it is illegal to leave poop.
Yeah.
Actually, through one of those at the last minute into the rundown, it was a company that's trying to make a statement about the ridiculousness of the app economy or something like that.
Good.
The human condition, something. Anyway, it was hilarious.
Pooper.io.
I have to say, one of the really interesting things, speaking of poop,
yes,
is we had a poop controversy in Pack Heights. So there, my neighbor was like, Jason, your bulldogs are leaving poop outside of my house.
And I was like, I'd be mad.
Like, I was like, no, I walk my dogs myself, and my wife walks the dogs, and we have a cleaning lady. Sometimes she walks the dogs. It's like, that's not possible. But I said to the person, like, okay, I'm going to set up a camera. And, you know, I was just going to turn the drop cam on the street, right?
Yeah.
And be like, okay,
yeah.
Well, because listen,
some homeless
there's
guy,
1,000 dogs walking around.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was San Francisco. And so she's like, oh, buy me a drop cam. And
what?
I was like, I'm not buying you a drop cam. Like,
what?
Nice try.
She asked you to buy
her
a drop
cam? Yeah, she's like, no, I need to have the drop cam because I need to have the video footage. And I was like, okay, listen, calm down.
If
so
it's
then
my
I put
dog,
the camera
I will
there,
buy you a drop cam.
And she's like, oh, there's residue or whatever. So she goes, oh, there's poop outside. I said, okay, what happened? So then I look at it, and it turns out there's no dog had pooped, but a dog had pooped on outside of her house.
Yeah.
The person cleaned it up.
Yeah.
But there was residue of the poop.
Yeah,
in other words,
I'm not sure I really care.
95% was contaminated.
Yeah,
and
that's interesting.
We had this residue issue. But what
it's
was very interesting about
a
it
residual,
is
problem.
I will tell you, there's something very interesting happening with Ring.com, which I'm not an investor in. Unfortunately, I passed on investing in that
company.
And
they are, a sponsor. We should mention
Ring.com realized that. Like 95, I passed on investing in this company like an idiot.
You did? You actually did?
And you know, Jamie Siminoff's a friend of mine, and I made the classic error of I didn't think it through, and I should have just bet on Jamie. That's like a $1 million mistake probably. But anyway, what the Ring community is doing is, because people are stealing packages now, right, because of all the on-demand deliveries.
In fact, UPS will not leave a package on my stoop because our neighborhood, they're getting a lot of robberies.
Now, if you get Ring, what's happening is Ring plus Nextdoor equals no crime.
Yep.
So what's happening is people are putting Rings, which are like $200. I just ordered one.
Yep.
And it has a full view of your door.
Yep.
People ring it. You pick up the phone and you go, oh, hey, just leave the package there. But if somebody steals it, then you can easily upload it. And then I don't know if you use Nextdoor, but it's like a local Facebook for communities.
Oh, that's a good idea.
They're all sharing the videos of stolen
Some
stuff.
Guy.
So in Pack Heights, somebody was stealing stuff.
Wow.
Two different people caught the same person doing it in the same like week.
Busted.
Busted. Everybody gives, and then the police department.
Amazing thing is, it was one of his bulldogs.
It was my bulldog.
Full circle.
And he dropped a deuce after stealing the package.
Somebody gave me a link next door. Discover your neighborhood. This was Facebook for your neighborhood.
He's a very vindictive bulldog. Bad.
Somebody
tourist.
Gave me a link of you calling out Mark Zuckerberg for supporting Trump. Is that a YouTube video? Do you know about that?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't say he was supporting him, that he wasn't not
he wasn't
coming
not
out against
supporting him. Right.
Here's the thing.
But he can't. He needs to maintain objectivity because now he's a media guy, not a social network guy.
But here's the point. I think that you have to address, forget about picking a side.
Right.
If you're Zuckerberg and you have a position on immigration, and another person picks the polar opposite position,
then you'd be reasonable to say, well, he doesn't share my opinion.
Just as Americans, I believe we should talk about issues and we should debate issues.
Say
that's what makes
F8, we should build bridges, not fences. He said that was clearly targeted at Trump.
I think it was, yes. But then you have he really fought for immigration and the H-1B visas and all this kind of stuff. You have to consistently discuss what people's ideas are. And that's what makes our democracy great, is the debate of ideas. And you know what? We've lost that, and we've become polarized about Hillary's a crook.
Right.
You know, Trump is a racist. Those are...
I blame, by the way, Twitter for this, because everything has to be 140 characters. And I feel like Twitter is driving this election in a way that is very scary to me, because I think 140 characters is exactly what
I think
say,
Trump is the master of Twitter.
He has mastered Twitter.
He knows exactly how to troll people.
One problem with that idea, though, Jason, is that Mark Zuckerberg is like 100
William Randolph Hearst's. He's got so much power to influence the public opinion. Nobody in the history of mankind has ever had, what is it, 1.67 billion sets of eyeballs that at his disposal. So I kind of don't like the idea of him weighing in with his personal opinions
Here's the thing.
On Facebook in any sort of major way.
I'm not saying he should remove Trump from everybody's feed and use his power as the arbiter of, you know, the 1.7 billion people in the
feed.
This
would be wrong to do that.
Yeah, he should not tilt it. What he should do is he can come out as an individual and say...
Mark Cuban just did that. Surprisingly. I think a lot of people were surprised.
We all just have to say, listen, if your position is all Muslims should be banned from the country, let's talk about that idea. Okay, that is obviously a crazy bad idea. Now, if you want to talk about, hey, people coming from this region that has the largest number of terrorists, we're going to give them extra screening because we know it's a terrorist hotbed.
By the way, that's what Trump has said now is his policy.
Right. But so this shows you what a master troll he is. He basically said the most
outrageous thing first.
Got all the attention in the media cycle, beat out Cruz and all these other idiots, and then he now is coming back down towards the middle and trying to say intelligent things. It may wind up being...
You think he's going to win?
I'll tell you why I think he's going to win. I think he's going to win because there's so many people who've been ground down and feel no hope.
Right.
That voting for Hillary Clinton feels like you're preserving...
More of the same.
We're preserving the state.
It's a third term for Obama.
Right. We're preserving the state where I have been screwed.
Right.
Whereas with Trump, maybe he's crazy, but maybe he's crazy enough to make it better for me.
And it can't get worse.
It can't get worse. If all these people are getting private jets and becoming billionaires and adding $3 billion in an afternoon to their net worth, and we're unwilling to raise, and we're fighting against the raising of the minimum wage, we're fighting against two more years of college, we're fighting against universal health care, well, you know what? F y'all. I'm going to burn it down. And I don't think people are unreasonable in that. We have ground the middle class down too much. We have ground poor people down too much. And we could very easily, you know, make life a lot easier and reduce suffering for a large number of people based on the prosperity this country has. And we... The tax laws and how we distribute wealth. I'm not into wholesale redistribution. I'm not into universal income necessarily. But I do think things like raising the minimum wage and giving people an extra 2 years of college, you know, it's not that big of a deal on an economic basis. We have to give people hope that they can move up in the world, and people don't have the American dream that they used to.
The problem is, we're getting political again, but...
it's hard not to. This is, you know,
we're 100 days out
of the country. 100 days is going to be a very long 100 days, by the way.
Oof, it's been a long past 100.
Yeah, but
what are we going to say?
I do agree with you that I think, you know, Zuckerberg should do a post on his Facebook profile like anybody else, and that'd be great. That'd be
It's an interesting question because, you know... there's two kind of schools of thought, and the traditional old school of thought is that journalists should raise – and I'm going to put Zuckerberg in this category because Facebook has moved from being the social network to the social media. But that journalists should keep themselves above the fray and not declare for a candidate and a feign objectivity. That the other school of thought is, but they aren't objective and they have an opinion. Mm-hmm. So not to disclose is to, in effect – dissemble, to pretend that you're being objective when in fact you can't be, you aren't.
Right.
So you're clearly of the second school of thought.
I just think we need to have a debate about ideas. You know, and if you're
but
a journalist...
I don't think it's Mark's job to foster that debate, is it?
I think as leaders...
Is he a leader?
For sure he's a
he's
leader.
A
he's an
influencer.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
At this point, what's at stake is so high, I think everybody has to come out, every American, and discuss the ideas. And we have to start thinking... What ideas do we want to pursue? What strategies do we want to pursue as a country? Because the world is changing very
quickly.
Isn't
he going to do what his fiduciary responsibility is, which is to maximize
benefit? That is what he's doing.
He's doing what maximizes the benefit
that's
of the
what he's
stakeholders,
doing.
And that's
why
he
had Glenn
shut the hell up.
You know, he had Glenn Beck over, and he's like, I'm going to have Glenn Beck over, and Glenn Beck's going to come over for the right-wing summit.
His job is to be above the fray.
Yeah.
You're asking him to do something... That maybe not in his
just
best business
on,
interest.
Well, I think he
for
should.
For a moral reason, I guess.
Well, no, I think that the immigration issue specifically does relate to his business
right.
because of, you know, importing talent to the country.
I think actually Clinton has come out against H-1B as well. She's a little concerned about that. I mean, you know, I think what people look at is what Disney did, for instance, which is replace all of its in-house IT people with H-1B importees and have them train their replacement before on the way out the door.
And
that's happening an awful lot. H-1B is being misused.
There are abuses of all systems, and then you have to decide if
companies like WePro using this, manipulating this system.
Yeah,
you know what's funny in the political debate is that Donald Trump has said a whole bunch of incendiary things about immigration, about Muslim immigrants, and so on. And a lot of people, out of frustration, have said that if he gets elected, I'm going to move to Canada. And he's also said a lot of things about Mexicans coming in. We need to build a wall, all that kind of stuff. What's funny about that is that the American public seems super uneducated about the immigration policies of other countries. So, for example, Canada deports illegal immigrants, and they have a fabulous H-1B visa-centric immigration system where if you're a skilled person, you're welcome in Canada. It's not like the U.S. where if you have no skills, you come on in, but if you're like super highly skilled and an entrepreneur and have a lot of money to spend, we don't want you. We only want 64,000 of you or whatever the ludicrous
Canada has an interesting history, because in the 70s they had a much more open immigration policy, and as a result Canada is an incredibly diverse country. I think Toronto has 3 Chinatowns as a result. I mean, it's really diverse.
But see,
and I think there was a backlash, which I wouldn't be surprised to see Justin Trudeau reverse.
The only way to have diversity is to actually have a Canada-style immigration policy where you decide who comes in and who doesn't, and then you don't let the people who are illegal from coming in. That's what Canada does. That's what Mexico does. And that's how you have diversity. In the United States, you know, you have like a huge percentage of the population coming in from a single country or a single region, and that's not diversity. That's counter-diversity. But anyway, I think the point that's really frustrating to think about the election is that the main two candidates are always against the H-1B visa thing because it's a populist issue.
And
they're completely wrong about it. They're completely wrong.
They took our jobs.
Right. You're absolutely right. Silicon Valley it's up to Silicon Valley to really push on the H-1B visa issue because nobody else is going
to. Well, it needs to be reformed because it is being abused.
There can be abuse, just like there's credit card abuse, but we don't want to get rid of credit cards, right? So you have to be able to keep these two conflicting ideas in your head.
Yeah.
This is why I think the dialogue in this country has become so dangerous, if you want to call it the Twitterification of dialogue. We're just going to snip at each other, you know, that and you know, do ad hominem attacks is really destructive because these are very
ideas don't get debated and solved.
They're very complex issues.
Yeah, they become polarized.
And, you know, like the H-1B visa, we want the smartest people to come here and be on our team. And the idea that we're going to deport people is crazy. But it's also crazy to think that you're going to have open borders and allow people from regions who have massive terrorist problems to freely flow into a country is also a bad idea, as we've seen in European countries. And, you know, if you say we have to have reasonable immigration, we have to think about who we're bringing in, you know, this regressive left says you're a racist because, oh, my God, you don't want to let this country freely flow in. Well, it's like, well, that country is living in another century with how they treat gays, women, and their views about terrorism and that it's okay to blow people up. Well, maybe you don't want those people, you know, and maybe you really want to think about if a group of people thinks women should be subservient to men and not drive. Maybe we don't want to actually steer our society towards that world. And that doesn't mean you're a racist. It means you don't want to have women be subservient to men and you don't want gays to be thrown off buildings. Like, this logical discussion, you know, needs to be reset. And we have to be able to have very logical non-attacking discussions with each other. And, you know, Trump is a master at the ad hominem attack. And it's a very scary time for the world. It's a very scary time for the world, I believe.
Meanwhile, it's an interesting week ahead. Jason Howell has a look.
Yes.
Thanks, Leo. Let's take a trip into the future to see what we expect to be keeping an eye on in the week ahead. It's time to find out what's insecure and hackable and get a little scared with the Black Hat security event already underway and lasting through Wednesday, August 4th. We have Father Robert Balasair and Brian Burnett on the floor covering the event and hoping like heck their phones don't get compromised in the process. Also, starting on August 4th is another infamous hacking conference, DEF CON 24, lasting through the 7th. In non-hacky news, to expect. Samsung unveils its next big flagship device, the Galaxy Note 7, on Tuesday, August 2nd at 8 a.m. Pacific. Leo, myself, and Ron Richards will be covering that event live here at Twit, so tune into that. And also on the 2nd, Microsoft officially releases the Windows 10 anniversary update. I hope you got it free while you could. Megan Maroney and I will be chatting about all this and a whole lot more every day next week on Tech News Today. So we hope to see you there. Now, back to you, Leo.
Isn't that a good show?
Great show. You know what I like about it is, like, they get to the point. They're very efficient on the show. I think it's 30, 40 minutes each hit. Yeah. So when I'm driving, I listen to it like every other day.
Well, tune in, as Jason mentioned, 8 in the morning on Tuesday.
I don't listen to it at that time. I time shift.
We're going to be, well, it's not on at that time normally, but I have to come in early because the Note 7 is coming. We think it'll be called the Note 7, the next Samsung Galaxy Note.
That's the big
announced
one
in New York. That's the big one with the stylus. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will have some final thoughts and words. We've gone almost 2 hours. I could go another 4 hours with you guys. I love talking about difficult stuff with smart people.
And, dialogue.
Dialogue, man.
I mean, there's an argument that this is why podcasting has actually done
people
so well.
People want to hear conversation.
People want to have a deep conversation.
I mean, they don't want five-minute. Your show, This Week in Startups, it's really meaty.
Well, I modeled it after our time together. You know, it's like we talk about startups in the way you talk about tech.
It's
like
meaty.
Get
and
deep.
I think, well, I hope you're right. I hope there is a market for that.
Clearly.
Going forward, because if they're not, I'm not going to, my whole plan of moving to New Zealand is going to fall through.
I'm starving right now.
Are you hungry?
I'm dying.
You know what you should do? You should get a Blue Apron box. Did you ever try that? We could get you set up.
I'm going to set this up. You know what? I've been dancing around the idea of Blue Apron. I know about it. They send you a box. This is what I know. Just, they send you a box. Everything's all set up, and then I can cook dinner in like 10 minutes.
And you got all the ingredients, no more, no less than you need. But they're it kind of reminds me of Tesla in that there's this product, it makes sense, it serves a purpose, but there's a larger goal, much like Elon's larger goal to a sustainable world.
Yep.
Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everybody.
Yep.
Because everybody should cook, because this is human. This is what humanity is about, is making a meal for your family, your loved ones. There's just, it's magic. And supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, building a community of home chefs. They really, their heart is in the right place. The apron comes from the Cordon Bleu, the famous French cooking school where the apprentices would wear blue aprons. You are an apprentice. But don't be, I don't want to, I kind of worry that people are going to say, oh, this is too hard for me.
No, the point of this is that it's easy. They also portion everything, right?
They portion, you got the shopping done. That's the hard part. The meal planning, the shopping is the thing I always, you know, think, oh, I got it, and I never do. And then you get to the end of the day, 5 o'clock, and the last thing you want to do is go to the store, think about what you're going to make. If you want burgers, make barbecue pork burgers and corn on the cob with crispy onion rings and garlic. What does it say? Garlic butter? Oh, my God, that looks so good. Doesn't that look good?
Look at that.
And you can do it. Everything you need is there. They give you a recipe card with pictures. There's even videos.
So you can learn.
You learn. There's videos online, and nothing is hard. You will be using ingredients maybe you've never heard of. I've learned a lot. I found a bok choy. I can't remember the name of it. That's unique. It's wonderful. And I will be using it a lot more. You get, they have plans for couples, but they also have family plans. And
that's
by
amazing.
The way, cooking together with a family, with your kids.
That's what it's all about.
Research shows Blue Apron families cook three times together, three times more often. Summer vegetable and quinoa bowl with fairy tale eggplants, shishito peppers, and corn. Oh. And your mouth. The other thing is, the sensory experience is much better because you're cooking in the home. The home starts to fill with these amazing aromas. People start going, what are you doing? And you just feel good about it. And it's love in a box. It's awesome. Chicken tinga tacos with summer squash and tomato salsa. Now, you get to pick when the box arrives, so you no surprises.
Yep.
You get to pick your menu plan. You just go there. And we're going to set it up so you get your first three meals free when you go to blueapron.com/twit. blueapron.com/twit.
Three free meals.
This is such a great idea. The meal's about $10 each. Take about 40 minutes to prepare. In fact, shopping at the grocery store, I didn't realize this, is more expensive than Blue Apron. They actually are saving you money. CR1 in our chat room says, cooking with your spouse is a good way to be single. No.
No, the opposite.
No, it's so... Lisa and I made pasta the other night together with the crank and the whole thing, and it was this wonderful experience.
It's a
sure, you
experience.
Fight a little bit because she says, no, I want to use the thin cutter. I said, no, you want the thick... But But you know what? You grow. You grow out of it.
You want to capitalize. You want to pump it up.
Another way to use Blue Apron, too, is like usually one of the couple does most of the cooking.
Right.
And it's a perfect opportunity for the other one to give the main cooker a break. Yeah.
We have a deal. One cooks, one washes dishes, and you rotate. Right. That's the way to do it, right?
Very nice.
Anyway, thank you, Blue Apron, for your support. Thank you guys for being here. Always the smartest, best conversations with Jason and Mike, and I'm really thrilled you're here. I was curious if you saw this article about dark patterns. This isn't something you don't know. They're all over the web. They're interfaces that intentionally confuse you. The idea being...
And like Snapchat?
Yeah. No. Not intentionally obscure, but that you accidentally sign up for a service feature. When you download a file from, let's say, I don't know, downloads.com, you accidentally agree to have the Ask toolbar replace your Google search.
I hate that stuff, Bundleware.
There is a fabulous site, darkpatterns.org. Designer Harry Brignall does this, and he has put together examples on the site, a library of bait and switch, disguised ads, faraway bill, forced community, forced disclosure, friend spam, hidden costs. We've all experienced this stuff. And number one, bait and switch, Microsoft Windows 10 upgrade. Anyway, really worth reading at darkpatterns.org. And since we all experience it, it's good to bring it to the surface. Don't unconsciously do all this clicking. Speaking of which, I expect to get a flurry of phone calls from people who say, hey, I thought the Windows 10 upgrade was free. Why do they want $120 now?
What?
It's over. July 29th, Friday was the last day. Nobody believed Microsoft was going to start charging. They did. And if you didn't do the upgrade, I had somebody on the call on the radio show. He said, oh, yeah, I did the upgrade. I set it to do it on Tuesday. And I didn't really have the heart to tell them.
Why are they charging a one-time? Why don't they make it a monthly subscription, like $1 a month?
You know, I'm surprised that they don't, because that's their goal, obviously. They do it with Office now, that software as a service subscription. I think they really wanted everybody to be on us the same platform. What Microsoft has said is, this is the last version of Windows. We're not going to do Windows 11. We're not going to do Windows 12. Mike, you were an editor of Windows Magazine for years, so you weigh in on this. What we want to do is... And they say every 2 to 3 times a year, in fact, the first one's coming on Tuesday, we're going to make an update. It's free. Once you have Windows 10, you're done. You don't need to buy Windows ever again. And that, I think, is really to focus people on, just like Apple, on the services, on the subscriptions, on Azure, on cloud, on OneDrive.
Yeah.
You think so, Mike?
Yeah, I think Apple does it right, and I think it's obvious that that's the way to do it.
Apple hasn't charged for upgrades in years.
But partly because you can't run their software on somebody else's hardware. So you're really buying Apple hardware, which is, you know, always very profitable for them. But I think that it's clear that, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. If Microsoft can come out with a model for you to acquire the latest features and everything on Windows without confusing everybody. They've always had all these different options. Nobody knows what's going on, what the price is really. So I'll believe it when I see it, but I do hope that they move to it. Obviously, there are going to be new versions of Windows, but they call it a new version or not. They're going to be updating it all the time.
They charge for it is the question, really.
Exactly. Right. There's an article on winbeta.org you might want to check out that says that you can get it free if you change your clock.
That would be a classic Microsoft move.
Oh, my God. Yeah. They also, I should mention this, if you use assistive technologies, they are also extending the deadline, which was reasonable because people who use JAWS and other screen readers and other assistive technologies may not be able to upgrade, but they want to make sure you get to. So there is a form you can fill out and say, I'm using this assistive technology, and you will be able to upgrade later. But for everybody else.
I just bought my first Windows computer in a decade.
What? Why?
Oculus.
Why?
Oh, yeah. You had to.
They got me.
You had to. And
I'm back in.
Okay, well, we'll wrap up with VR because I think that's an interesting topic. I've just heard that the PlayStation VR, which will be coming out, they'll have some bundles in a month or two, is going to require 60 square feet, 10 feet by 6 feet of clear space.
That's realistic.
But it's but PlayStation VR, you can't get up. So I don't even know why. But yeah, what is that going to help the sale? Oh, Mom, can we move everything out of the living room? I want to get a PlayStation VR.
6 by 10.
6 by 10. That's a lot. Mm. The Vive, similar, because it has two cameras. But the Vive, you get up and move around. I don't understand why this is...
Is that, Is that similar to the old Kinect using Xbox?
Yeah, the old Kinect, you had to get far enough back. You're right. The new one is a little easier, but the old one, you had to get far enough back. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Because they're using the camera. They're not getting made. They didn't make a new camera. They're using the old PlayStation.
How long are people going to play these games for?
This is my question. I'm starting to think this might be a gimmick.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because like Kinect and like the Wii, people got really into it.
The Wii is a great example.
And then what happened? It didn't sustain. So is this going to be sustainable or not?
Is it the 3D TV? Is it just a gimmick? I have to say, we have a Vive and a Rift. Did you get your Rift yet? Did you get it set up?
Oculus Rift, yeah. I mean, it's nice, but it's not like I'm running.
You don't run to play it, do you? I got it back there.
In fairness, I'm not a video game player, you know, but I'm very interested with these like hardcore gaming people who play 10 hours of games. Are they going to play this 10% of the time, 20% of the time? And if so, when?
I think not. I think the hardcore gamers are going to prefer their existing experience, their Call of Duty experience. They got a big screen. They got it set up the way they like it. They got the keyboard, they got the mouse.
Will there be a new sort of pocket of gaming that, like casual gaming that emerged, right? Like, so we didn't anticipate that a bunch of casual games on mobile phones would exist, and now you have this group of people.
That's the unknown, isn't it?
You know, like,
you need the killer app. You always need the killer app.
The Angry Birds of this, the Farmville, the Bejeweled. I don't know.
I went to E3, and there were all the major coming VR gaming platforms had these booths. Of course, they had to deal with the fact that in one way or another that people could bump into others. It was a very crowded show. In some cases, they assigned a person to stand there next to somebody who's using the goggles. In other cases, they had a sort of an isolated.
Yeah.
And so there seemed to be a lot of excitement. I do think hardcore gamers are going to love it. I don't think casual gaming is going to be big on VR because it's not a casual thing. You know, it's like, to immerse yourself in a virtual thing is inherently not casual. You know what I'm saying? And I think that there's also a question about how many hours you can play this without feeling nauseated and that sort of thing. It's really fascinating to see that for years we've been talking about virtual reality, and now it's becoming clear that augmented and mixed reality is going to be enormous and great for casual gaming. Very clear already.
I think augmented is. I think augmented is more about a new UI, a new way of thinking about it. And you described a scenario where we're sitting here. We could see, and we were just wearing regular glasses, maybe.
Yeah.
Kind of like Noble's strange Google Glass.
Yeah.
But instead of, but we're seeing the world.
Valuable
plus,
information.
The world plus. Yeah. I think that is a killer app.
For sure.
I'm not sure that I want to spend more than 20 minutes or half an hour at a time wearing a helmet.
Exactly.
I would wear the augmented reality stuff all the time if I could, when I'm walking through a neighborhood.
Yeah, if it's glasses. Look at Pokemon Go. I mean, it's amazing. You sit here and you're playing the game as you walk around. You're walking around on a map of your world. The augmented reality part isn't really augmented reality, but that's not what I'm talking about. You're seeing the world you're in, and you're seeing Pidgeys and Rattatas around you. That's pretty
cool. I'm super fascinated by a patent that Carl Zeiss has for an augmented reality Google Glass style lens technology. Essentially what they're doing is it's roughly as obtrusive as bifocals. They actually just do stuff with the lens itself on glasses. And this can be sunglasses, regular glasses, prescription glasses, or whatever. And it just takes that, whatever it's beaming from the side, and makes it do a left turn right into your eye, just like Google Glass does, and you cannot even see it at all. And I think once we can have a smart upgrade for our regular glasses that we're already wearing, forget about it. It's going to be like so amazing to have augmented reality data, and we're going to see it everywhere.
Yeah, I just want to be able to walk down the street, and then if somebody has a felony, I just want, or, you know, like, is a predator of some kind, it just puts like a big red,
I mean,
you start thinking about it, like, if people are, I mean, this is, we're moving to this Minority World Report. If somebody's in the sex registry, they're just going to, like, have this, like, big sign above their head.
Let's get Noble up here. Noble,
is that ACLU?
Noble has a community on Google Plus. Can we get a chair and a microphone, or just at least a chair? We'll share.
Yes,
would you mind Noble coming up here? Because you're all in on wearables, but I think you also have something to share about. You got a Jibo shirt, I noticed. I think you got something to share about Magic Leap as well. We'll get you a chair over here, and I'm just curious. I'm looking at your Wearables Weekly community on Google Plus. Still in on the Google Plus? That's awesome.
Even after Robert Scoble gave up. You're still in.
Especially after he gave up.
That's a good reason to go back. Oh, look, we're even going to get him a microphone. Talk about it. But sorry, Mike. Hey, it's nice knowing you. Yeah. Bye-bye. No, they'll widen the shot. We had to slide Mike over a little bit to make some room. Thank you. I don't normally do this, but let's go crazy since Noble's in the audience.
Yeah, Noble's a really serious user and does a lot of really innovative stuff. So, yeah, glad you brought him up.
Yeah, why not? If you've got anybody else?
Yeah.
If you got brains in the audience.
Anybody up here have a Blue Apron recipe they prefer? Come
on up. Noble, are you from around here or where are you from?
Absolutely not. I'm from D.C.
Okay, get right up to the mic.
Washington, D.C.
And are you going to get a Jibo?
I am.
Do you have a Jibo yet?
I do not. I'm actually one of the developers on there.
Oh, are you? Oh, so this is your business then, the Jibo part. I have one on order, by the way. Can you tell Cynthia to hurry up? I'm ready for my Jibo. The Jibo is like an Amazon Echo, but it looks at you.
Yeah.
It's like a pet.
It's like a pet. Is that what it feels like to you when you?
It has a little personality. It has a screen on it. Makes faces at
what,
you.
What part of it are you working on?
They had an open developer kit and.
So you have one and you're.
I do not have one.
Independently developing. Right.
You can actually use
a
virtual environment.
I saw that actually. Yeah, that's kind of cool. So tell us about Magic Leap. What do you know? What do you hear? What do you think?
It's right now, not a lot of people know anything about it. And if you did know anything about it, you couldn't talk about it.
I actually have not seen it. Oh, there is a big thing in the investor community, though, that all this money's been poured into it and. Nobody's seen it.
Theranos had a little bit of money poured into it, too.
The difference here is that people who invested in Theranos maybe...
didn't know what they were doing.
And the people who've invested in this are...
know what they're doing.
Magic Leap people are like, oh, these are the world's best investors. So they must have vetted it.
Oh, okay. I know what you're looking at, Karsten. This is the gym. This is from the Magic Leap webpage. There's kids in the gym and the giant whale comes out or... A child's holding a small elephant in her hand. But these are fake videos, much like the HoloLens videos overstated the HoloLens capabilities. This is not magically.
Shouldn't they have to put on this simulation somewhere? Like, this is not the actual product?
Yeah, but, I mean, they actually also have videos that...
We saw in the Wired article that Kelly did that... we saw the video. We don't really understand how they took it.
It's been vetted. It's a real thing.
Has it?
It's just playing with light fill technology, if you remember Lytro.
Right.
So the same concept. They're just approaching it. Their biggest challenge would be to, as with all of these things, to miniaturize it to the point where it actually makes sense to wear. Not a tethered thing like it is right now. So that's what they're...
How many years until untethered... just full-on augmented reality with normal lenses.
Jason and like, I want, walking around town.
Yeah. Like your glasses, but plus like 20% maybe, or plus 30%.
Personal opinion, crystal ball, four years, 2020.
Okay, I'll take it.
That's quicker than I thought.
If not sooner,
really?
I think. Law of accelerating returns.
How long till it's under $200?
Now that, I probably a little later.
$300, $400?
Yeah. That is quite cheap. Yeah,
it took 10 years for this Axon to be half the price
six to ten years of an iPhone.
Right. So, and that's because all the technologies that Samsung and Apple did,
they drafted off them, got
mass produced. Magic Leap, according to an article you linked to on your Google Plus page, will soon have a developer testing lab at Lucasfilm. Right. That's encouraging.
In the Presidio on Letterman Drive.
Little Disney investment there. That seems like somebody's... interested.
What's the killer app going to be for these augmented glasses, do you think? What's the thing that people will use most of the time? Most hours consumed?
So it's different. For Magic Leap, it's going to be more entertainment. If you notice, they're aligning themselves with the LucasArts of the world.
Right.
With VR, since it was completely immersed, it would be gaming. I have always, I wrote a thing about VR being the gateway drug to what people really want, which is like true mixed reality, true AR, which actually recognizes and has context around with spatial awareness and tries to do what HoloLens and Meta Vision and all those other guys are trying to do.
So Mike could be here and we wouldn't know that he was not here.
Mike could literally be sitting where I'm sitting right now.
I can do that now, actually. The people who...
Didn't CNN do that?
Yeah, well, that was terrible during the election last time. But Craig Panos, was involved with the people who created that 3D character I did on the site 20 years ago.
Right.
Using a Silicon Graphic Onyx, a million-dollar workstation.
Yeah.
He said, you could do that on a PC now.
Yeah.
And you could have somebody sit. Noble actually isn't here. He's back in Washington, D.C. You could have him sitting here and watch. I could put my hand right through him, see? And so it doesn't...
But that it would fool you. Like, if I sat down and I couldn't tell who was here and who wasn't, how long before that?
They intentionally, on CNN, made her vibrate. We know the guy who did it. I mean, they didn't want it to look real. They want it to look magical.
But what's going to happen is it's actually going to be really a fascinating world when, if Noble's right, 6 years or so.
I don't need avatars. I want you all sitting here.
But it raises some philosophical questions. So one of the expected applications, of which there will be many that we haven't thought of, but one that I have thought of is that, those roadside memorials, if somebody dies in a car accident, put flowers and things like that. They're going to build memorials that are in augmented reality, and they'll have a sort of a holographic video of the person. Now, what's the difference between that sort of semi-see-through person waving from the roadside and a ghost? Like, philosophically, what is really the difference?
That is kind of ghostly.
When people would leave messages for their family members in a full person holographic image. And what's the difference between that and that person projecting their soul through the universe to another? It's really psychologically, it's going to be very different than we think it is. It's going to be a lot like the world used to be before we had science, where you thought every object had a spirit inhabiting it, the volcano gods and all this stuff. Well, I think we're going to sort of go back to a version of that psychologically, where we're going to see these multiple dimensions. All we need is the right app, and we're going to see dead people, just like in.
I actually have a picture from the future. This is Twit in the year 2828.
Here we are in the Jedi Council.
In the Jedi Council.
The Twit Jedi Council.
None of this is real. It's all teleporting in from our
home. iPhone will have no phone jack at all. What do you think of the lightning connector,
Jacob? Noble, give us a place to plug. Where do you hang your hat most of nowadays?
Lately, I've been posting a lot on Medium. So medium.com at Noble Ackerson. My first name and last name.
You have to use a last name there, unlike Google Plus, huh?
Unlike Google. Actually, Google Plus, I heard I was going to be verified, so I just removed my last name just so I could be like Prince. My life.
Noble. I'm Noble. You need a glyph, Prince. Next, it's a glyph. So we'll look for a Noble Ackerson.
Yes, sir.
On medium.com. Thank you for coming up. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Nice to meet you.
This is an honor.
Good stuff.
Mike Elgin, great to have you too. Everybody should go to elgin.com, follow Mike and his travels. Of course, he's Becoming Nomad, and that's the name of his other site, becomingnomad.com. Next,
and avoiding sailors in Marseille.
Next,
is he becoming Marseille. Nomad? Like, are you literally going to travel the world?
He's doing it. I'm so jealous.
I'm doing it. So jelly.
So Jason, that's the title of the upcoming book, and so I've got a website out there. But the idea is you put all your stuff into storage, or in your case, you just throw it all in the Tesla.
Yeah,
and then you live in Airbnbs and other sort of.
How long are you going to do this for?
As long as I can get away with it.
Wow,
isn't this awesome? They started in Cuba. You've been to Mexico, then on to Aix-en-Provence.
I've been in and out of this lifestyle for about.
Is
for
there
about
a downside, like not having a home? Did you feel like a psychological explain.
And Amira misses her kitchen, I think, probably, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's a big thing. There are all kinds of, one of the things is that, we come and go into the United States. We make friends abroad. And it's like one of the things we've noticed is we're always saying goodbye to people.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a bummer. But there are lots of downsides, which I'll enumerate on the website and elsewhere over time. But I think the benefits for some people are just, it's the first time in human history where you can just live anywhere you want just about.
I'm waiting for the Jedi Council technology, widespread high-speed internet. There's no reason we couldn't run Twit. We couldn't do Twit anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
I'd like to do it from a boat. That might be a little more challenging.
I'm gonna be scuba diving, so I'll just come in from like 100 feet underwater.
No, you won't be scuba diving. You'll have your rebreather. You actually won't emerge from the water, but every few years to get a new carbon filter. And
I'm going aquanomad.
Becoming Nemo.
Follow Jason at calacanis.com. He's at Jason on Twitter. And don't forget those great newsletters at Inside.com.
Yeah, go to vr.inside.com. We started a VR newsletter. Yes, fastest growing. It's got 13 or 14,000 people.
That's proof that maybe there's something going on there, right?
Something is. It's our fastest growing. 1,000, 2,000 people a week. vr.inside.com.
You can't downplay the interest, at least.
Right? Are you doing this weekend AR or VR yet?
No. You should think about it.
No, you do it. I'm too busy.
You're done.
Way too busy.
You got This Week in Startups. That is, by the way, the must watch. The latest episode was great because it was just kind of, what did you call it? A jam session.
Well, I do these jam sessions already with founders where we just get together and say, hey, what are you struggling with?
Right.
And then they just help each other because it's very lonely to run these companies. So I just bring three or four people together and say, hey, let's jam out on making each other's businesses better. So anyway, you know, listen, I owe a lot to you. I modeled my podcast after this one.
Smart man. Good idea.
Well,
good thinking.
Yeah. It really helps a lot of founders. Yeah. It really does help because...
Well, it's also fascinating for those of us who aren't founders to hear how this process works.
Yeah. It's hard.
It is hard.
80% chance of failure. Who wants to join?
Yeah. Anyway, great to have you both. Thanks to our producer, Karsten Bondi, for putting us all together each week. Do a great job, Karsten. Mm. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time.
Thanks to the chat room. They always have great contributions.
Room.
They're really well behaved.
I consider them my writers, you know, like some of the best lines.
They punch it up.
I steal from the chat room.
I was going to steal the They Live line. Somebody had a great one. I was like, oh, when are we going to have They Live on our augmented reality?
They Live.
What a great sci-fi film. If you have not watched that one, it's got a 10-minute wrestling match in the middle. It's great.
I think I don't know that movie.
They Live with Rowdy Piper? Are you kidding me?
I'm not a big WWE fan.
Oh, and Stranger Things. Netflix.
Yeah, that has been... We binged that last week in about 2 days, and that was awesome.
Yeah. That was one of those binges where, like, Did you have the, like, are you awake? Are you awake? My wife is like, are you awake?
Dreaming? Am I dreaming
like,
this?
I'm awake.
That was a very interesting.
Creepy and great.
Netflix original. They're really doing a great job with those originals. They're making so many now, though, it's hard to know which to watch.
Metacritic. Go to Metacritic, sort by the user score for television.
They have recruited the rich and the powerful.
They're running the whole show.
Wake up! They're all about you, all around you.
Quality entertainment.
They're AR glasses.
Take a look. They are safe as long as they are not discovered.
I don't know what they are or where they came
from. Am I asleep? Am I dreaming this? Is this real? Is this the real life? Or is this just fantasy?
We have no other choice.
It is fantastic.
I don't think I can make it.
You will love it. I guarantee you will love it.
All right. Should I have a burrito? Should I have some popcorn?
Is it
popcorn?
Really in 4-3?
It is. Looks like it's in 4-3.
What a disaster. It is so well done.
Ladies and gentlemen, what did I say? 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC every Sunday. You can join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. You can join us in person in the studio. Now, there's some notes about this. This is one of our last weeks in this studio.
Studio
you guys...
Coming.
They emailed tickets at twit.tv. They got a nice seat. But we will be moving. The next couple of Twits will be here. Come see your brick. We are taking the bricks with us, I'm happy to say.
Nice.
We could take them down and remount them in the new studio.
Genius.
But the first Twit episode from the new studio will be August 21st.
Huh?
3 weeks.
I'll bring the donuts.
3 weeks. So there's that means there's two or three more Twits here. My math's not so hot, and then we'll be moving. And if you do, I guess we're going to let people come to the studio audience on that first show. We don't know exactly how much room there'll be. I think we'll figure it out. So do email us if you want to be in that first episode.
They can ride the cable car.
That I don't want to invite people to do because I think there's going to be. I don't know how much room there is on the cable car, and I don't want anybody falling out. So we're getting a cable car. To take us, so I'll wrap up the radio show on at 2 p.m. on the 21st. grab as many boxes as I can. Everybody here will be invited to grab a box or two, and then we're going to get on a cable car and drive to the new studio. We have a camera we'll bring with us. You'll be able to watch it live. And then we'll arrive at the studio and do Twit from there. And I think this Twit is going to be all in-house staff because we've never done that before. It'll be kind of fun to have Jason and Megan and Robert and do that from our studios, our brand-new studios. So you're more than welcome, but do email us because we will be monitoring the number of people who can get in there. Email tickets at twit.tv. Of course, you don't have to watch live. There's on-demand audio and video of everything we do on our website, twit.tv. You can also subscribe in every podcatcher known to man, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music, every podcast app. There's even Twit apps, thanks to our generous fans who are also developers. They put apps on every platform, Roku, Apple TV. There's like five apps on Apple TV, I should say. So get it, subscribe, don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time. Another
this
Twit.
It's amazing.